was taught are the very acme of what it means to be civilized. How many times on this program, and just...
Cussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Oh, I am a happy little mountaineer. My beloved Mountaineers managed to get past the University of Washington Huskies last night. And now we have an appointment with Destiny. No, we have an appointment with Coach John Calamari, or whatever his name is, and the Kentucky Wildcats. It's a hillbilly border war, I tell you. And it'll be going down tomorrow, so you don't have to worry about the program schedule being interrupted. We're 4-point underdogs. Frankly, it surprises me that we're not like 10-point underdogs. But hopefully the... Cats will stub their toes, all due respect to my friends in Kentucky. I want this one bad. But I'll try to let that be the only sports discussion of the evening before I lose half the audience. But I'm a happy mountaineer. I'm so proud of that. I'm just proud of those young men. Daggone it. Bless his heart that, you know, Bart Kopp and I have been communicating for eons now, it seems. And Bart Kopp's all angry that the Survivor has been preempted by March Madness. And I just I wrote him, if you go to the page today, you'll see that I dropped him a little note saying, you know, take it easy. Take it easy on March Madness. Because this hillbilly border war does mean something. And, you know, Bart's got a point. He says, you know, why does it have to be on CBS? Why can't they put it on Channel 46 or something? Well, they have, but you have to pay for it, extra. And, you know, bless his heart, Bart lives out in Flatland. He lives in Oklahoma. You can drop it's like Kansas. You can drop a marble and it won't move. Well, it's not like that here. And if it was on something, everybody doesn't have cable. This is a very, very poor state. We need over the air. Because we need every little bit of, I don't know, universal energy we can get in the way of rooting for the Mountaineers. Big games on tonight as well.
And I guess a little bit of a, careful, Bob, you're losing audience. I guess we've got a little bit of an internecine rivalry going on within the Horn family, too, because I know that, David in Tennessee and our buddy Lee and our buddy brother Luke will all be, rooting for the Vols, while meantime, the Horns, webmistress Sue, also known as ELO, and Cobwebs, and Lord knows Guy James will all be rooting for the Buckeyes. So, shake hands and come out swinging, and we'll all be friends tomorrow. Right? Right. So, what do we do this evening? Well, it is Friday, and it is a beautiful Friday here in what's left of the hills of almost level West Virginia. It's a mite cold yet, but it is beautiful. Beautiful indeed. And I can see the sun shining through our southern exposed windows of the studio here. Ferg wanted me to throw ball with him a little bit ago, but I said, son, show prep, remember? That's one of the downsides. You hate saying no to the boy. Because if we can just keep his elbow in good shape, he's a lefty, and somebody could teach him to pitch. Oh! I'm doing it again. Please, I promise I'll quit talking about sports as soon as I'm done with this note from Ron and Raleigh. Hey, Bob, does it make you as happy as it makes me to see Jim Boeheim sent packing? Just asking. Oh, it was glorious. It was glorious. And you know what? Seeing Kentucky held to what would seem to be de minimis points by Cornell was mighty good too. But yeah, seeing Jim Boeheim. Goodbye, Jim. Goodbye, Syracuse. See you later. We're still here. You're not. Goodbye. Yeah, feels real good. But anyway, to the show. You know what it's about. This is Friday on the front porch. We can be a little bit more lighthearted. We can be a little bit more free and easy with the way we go about the program, or not. You know, it's all up to you. This is a program that is driven largely by your attitudes and what you want to talk about. Great conversation about building green last night with John from Vermont as we went toward the truncated end of the program, knocked off about 20 minutes early for the Mountaineers. But there is a just to sort of get this out there, because I do like talking about the rest of the world, and I was reminded of the fact that I've been doing precious little of it last night. India and Bangladesh, Bangladesh, one of the lowest lying countries in the world. India and Bangladesh have had an ongoing property dispute, if you will, for nearly 30 years. They've been arguing about control of an itsy-bitsy rock of an island in the Bay of Bengal called New Moor Island in the Sundarbans chain. Well, and this is a little memo to the global warming deniers, the people who would rather do faith than knowledge and reason. India and Bangladesh will no longer have to potentially come to blows over New Moor Island, because New Moor Island is a no more island. Really. Yeah, despite the fact that, and you know how I wish global warming deniers like Don Blankenship could have been standing on New Moor Island as it became No More Island, as the waters washed over it and completely submerged it from rising sea levels around the world. How I wish Don could have been there, denying global warming with his last, up to his last bubbling breath. Greedy axe. It's gone. It's gone. Satellites confirm that New Moor Island is no more island. Sea patrols have confirmed that Newmore Island is no more island. Sugata Harza is a professor at Jadavpur University in Calcutta. Professor Hazra said, what these two countries could not achieve from years of talking has been resolved by global warming. Sea levels have been rising at alarming levels in the Bay of Bengal in the past decade. Up until the year 2000, sea levels rose at about 3 millimeters, that's 0.12 inches a year. Since then, however, the sea levels have been rising at about 5 millimeters, or 2/10 of an inch, annually. This is not the first island in the area to go away. No. Loachara was submerged in 1996. It had a population. They had to move to the mainland. At least 10 other islands in the area are at risk. Dr. Hazra said, we will have ever larger numbers of people displaced from the Sundarbans as more island areas come underwater. But remember, global warming is a hoax. Global warming isn't real. Because you know, what is reality if it's just, you know, displacing and ruining the lives of, you know, brown people? We cannot let the mewling desires to go on living of people who are barely living in the first place, I mean, really, get in the way of corporate profits. Oh, please. Now, there was no population on Newmore Island. Both India and Bangladesh had laid claim to it. It was about 3.5 kilometers long. That's about 2 miles, about 1.5 miles wide. The Bangladeshis referred to the island as South Talpati. There were no permanent structures there. And now there's just nothing there. It's gone from being an island to, at best, a reef. But remember, global warming is a greeniac host. Right? Got it? Sure. The fools. The mad fools. Isn't that the line from Dr. Strangelove? Yes. Yes, it is. So there's that. This thing is about to boil over and get completely out of the church's control. This question of what did Benny the Rat know and when did he know it? Well, it has to do with not, he wasn't Benny the Rat yet. He was still just Joe the Rat. What did he know and when did he know it? Things are popping up all over that are absolutely, you know, the horror of what happened in Germany with priests, the papacy say and speaking for the Pope saying he knew nothing. Even going so far today as to reaffirm its position that the future Pope Benedict XVI had no knowledge. Nine. Kind of knowledge. About a decision that allowed a known pedophile priest to resume pastoral duties back when the Pope was just a little Archbishop Joe the Rat, in Munich in 1980. Vatican spokesman Reverend Federico Lombardi said that a New York Times article, which said the future pope had been sent a memorandum relating to the reassignment of the troubled priest, contained no new information. Actually, no, none. and the Vatican has said that only its version of events is the real one.
The art of the art infallible!
And the Pope has none responsibility in this matter. That goes against these things that are called, because the church isn't very fond of them, facts. The Archdiocese of Munich and Freising has said that Cardinal Joseph Ratzinger, the future pope, had approved a decision to transfer Reverend Peter Hullermann into his diocese for therapy to overcome pedophilia. Man, you're starting out behind the eight ball just with that proposition alone, aren't you? However, the diocese says that Cardinal Ratzinger's deputy at the time, the Reverend Gerhard Gruber, took full responsibility for the decision to reassign the priest to pastoral duties a few days after his therapy began. Not ended, began. But the fact is, then Cardinal Ratzinger was sent a memorandum relating to the reassignment of Father Hullermann. Father Lombardi chose not to address that issue, saying instead, the then Vicar General Monsignor Gerhard Gruber has assumed full responsibility for his own erroneous decision to reassign. Yeah. Sure. You bet. But then a little closer to home, there's this. The story of the Reverend Lawrence Murphy in Wisconsin. The Associated Press reporting as follows. Arthur Budzinski says the first time the priest molested him, he was 12 years old, alone and away from home, at a school for the deaf. He says he asked the Reverend Lawrence Murphy to hear his confession, and instead the priest took him into a closet under the stairs and sexually assaulted him. That happened to 200 deaf boys at St. John's School for the Deaf just outside Milwaukee. They all say they were molested by Father Murphy decades ago. Yeah. What's that old saying? Dead men tell no tales. Well, I guess the motto at the time was deaf boys tell no tales. Or perhaps Father Murphy's particular motto was deaf boys have sweet tales. Disgusting. You know, and I even have issue with the way this article itself is written. Note, instead the priest took him into a closet under the stairs and sexually assaulted him. There's another word for that. It is a very real word. It is a horrible word, and it deserves to be used because it is, in fact, what was going on. The priest took him into a closet under the stairs and raped him. Raped. It is true that some of these allegations have been public for years. This week, however, documents obtained by the New York Times showed that Father Murphy was spared a defrocking in the mid-1990s because he was protected by the Vatican office that was, oh, what did he know and when did he know it, led by then Cardinal Joseph Ratzinger, now the Pope. The Vatican, of course, got all bristly when it was asked why it hadn't defrocked Father Murphy. They said that Father Murphy was old and in ill health, a trial, a church, not a real legal trial, but a church trial that probably, I don't know what church trials involved, you know, I don't know, dunking or exorcisms or, you know, whatever kind of crazy stuff they do. But not a jurisprudential, legal, justice-driven trial. Just a little bitty, simple, innocuous church trial was planned, and the higher-ups in the church said, stop it. He may have raped 200 little deaf boys, but he's old and sick. Imagine that. Old and sick is now a defense to charges of priestly little boy rape. Budzinski, who is now a bicycle and furniture assembler at a department store, said Father Murphy preyed on him during the 1960s. The priest was fluent in sign language and often told the boys they were handsome. He said he avoided Murphy as much as he could afterward. But when he went to Murphy's office the following year to make another confession, the priest led him to an adjoining room and raped him again. Budzinski has a 26-year-old daughter named Gigi. She said, it seemed like my father would be walking into a trap every time. Murphy raped him again next year in Budzinski's bed in his dormitory room. Other boys got similar treatment from Father Murphy. Gigi Budzinski said they would sleep in large open rooms in bunk beds. My father saw other boys being molested, too. They'd never talk about it. And giving credit where credit is due, church and Vatican documents do indicate that in the mid-1990s, two Wisconsin bishops urged the Vatican office, led by Cardinal Ratzinger, to let them hold a church trial. And that is the point at which the church said no. Leave him alone. He's old and sick. Donald Marshall was 13 years old when he was sent to a detention center for burglary. Father Murphy visited him several times a week. He said Father Murphy seemed nice when others were around, but then Marshall said he was later isolated in a cell after a fight, and the priest paid him a visit there. Quote, he was sitting on my bed reading the Bible to me, and he put his hand on my knee. He leaned over and started kissing me. That's when he tried to put his hand down my pants. That same St. John's Closet played host to Father Murphy when he raped Stephen Grier of Madison, Wisconsin, four times, starting when he was 14 years old. During the first assault, Murphy demanded that Grier remove his pants, and when he refused, Murphy pulled them off. Quote, Father Murphy put everything into the context of God. I felt like I was really brainwashed. I don't know. I don't know what to say. This is sickening. Peter Isley, the Milwaukee-based director of SNAP, the Survivors Network of Those Abused by Priests, said of the current pope, the goal of Cardinal Ratzinger, now Pope Benedict, was to keep all of this secret. How many more times does this have to happen before the church chooses to actually follow the teachings of Christ Jesus and do something about it? It may never happen. As long as the priests are more important than the children, it may never happen. Now, what that says about the future of the church, I don't know. I'm not part of it. It doesn't matter to me. Except to the extent that little raped boys matter. The innocence of little boys matter. The innocence of children matters. And when it is taken away by force by someone who claims to have the authority of Almighty God, you know what? That's a hate crime. I think the next time I run across some wingnut around here who says, hate crimes is thought crimes, dang it, it's another step toward living in Obama's communist wonderland or the workers' paradise. Next time I hear that, I'm simply going to ask, if you found out that a Roman Catholic priest had raped your little boy, would you simply want the man punished, or would you want to enhance his punishment because he was doing it in the name of Almighty God? You tell me. Because I think the answer is rather obvious. Now, I got an email from Beth in Texas, even as I was reading some of these stories yesterday. She sent me a blog post from the Archdiocese of New York and Archbishop Dolan. You got to hear this to believe it. Fridays of Lent are days of special sacrifice anyway, so I guess maybe the anguish caused by that day's headline in our city's newspaper should have been accepted as an invitation to further penance. Well, doesn't that just sound pissy? You're familiar with the crescendo of recent stories on the sad and disturbing case of a German priest accused in 1979 of the vicious crime and sin of sexually abusing minor boys. When these hideous allegations came to the attention of this priest's archbishop, a man by the name of Joseph Ratzinger, who now happens to be the Bishop of Rome, Pope Benedict XVI, he rightly removed the priest and ordered him to report for residential assessment and therapy. Huh? Are we talking about the same story here? The shock of the original abuse is intensified because, tragically, upon his release from treatment, the priest was reassigned to parish work. Wrong! The archbishop is lying, because it is clear from the story that I just shared with you that, no, in fact, what happened was that the priest was reassigned after beginning therapy, not ending it. Horribly, as often was the case, the Reverend Peter Hullerman went on to abuse teenagers again. Sad and sickening, a story all too familiar to us as we Catholics in the United States have had to face the same ulcer ever so frequently over the last 9 years. Ulcer? Ulcer? It's not an ulcer, Archbishop. It's a felony! An ulcer? You mean like a little sore that you get on your lip when you've done that with somebody who, and you got the... No, it's not an ulcer, Archbishop. But listen, you know, there's... Oh, Dr. Freud, we've got one for you. Listen to the Freudian slip language in this paragraph. Sad and sickening, a story all too familiar to us as we Catholics in the United States have had to face this same ulcer ever so frequently over the last 9 years. Scabs are reopened. Scabs? Scabs? What scabs, Archbishop? What scabs? Come on. Anger rekindled, trust painfully restored, now being chipped away at again. Victims, survivors, their families, the vast majority of priests and faithful Catholics, all hurt anew. Sounds a little bit like blame the victim, doesn't it? Pope Benedict XVI himself has expressed hurt, anger, sorrow, and contrition. As prefect of the Congregation of the Doctrine of the Faith, in other words, the enforcer, and now as pope, he is seen as one who gets it when it comes to the horror of clergy sexual abuse. No, he isn't! That's the whole point, Archbishop! He doesn't get it! It went on right under his nose! And he facilitated it happening more. So, the Archbishop is mad at the press. So, Friday's headline, only the most recent, stings us again. Doctor asserts church ignored abuse warnings, as the psychiatrist who treated the criminal, Dr. Werner Huth, blames the church for not heeding his recommendations. But wait. Wait. It's not the church's fault. No. What adds to our anger over the nauseating abuse and the awful misjudgment in reassigning such a dangerous man, though, is the glaring fact that we never see similar headlines that would actually be news. How about these, for example? Doctor asserts he ignored abuse warnings, since Dr. Huth admits in the article that he, in fact, told the archdiocese the abusing priest could be reassigned under certain restrictions, a prescription today recognized as terribly wrong. So, in other words, he's saying that the headline should have read that the doctor asserts that he ignored the abuse warnings, but acknowledges at the same time that the doctor would have had to have been able to see into the future and see the further development of sexual abuse medicine, psychology, psychiatry, in order to have done so. Doctor asserts public schools ignored abuse warnings. And then the good archbishop goes off and says, well, you know, there's a lot of people get abused by teachers. A lot of minors get abused by teachers and coaches and counselors and staff in government schools and government schools. Oh, boy, I think we've got a white winger here. Government schools. Oh, Archbishop, I speak the code, son. Government schools is much, much worse than that done by priests, he writes. So, really, Archbishop? Really? Do you really want to go on to the sliding scale of degrees of nastiness in little boy rape? Do you really want to go down that slippery slope, Archbishop? Or how about this headline? Doctor asserts judges or police, lawyers, district attorneys, therapists, parole officers ignored abuse warnings, since we now know the sober fact that no one in the healing and law enforcement professions knew back then that the depth of the scourge of abuse, or the new, now taken for granted conclusion that abusers of young people can never safely work closely with them again. Wow. Last I checked, all the fundamentalists and hardcores said that moral relativism was the problem of the liberals. What causes us Catholics, he says, to bristle is not only the latest revelations of sickening sexual abuse by priests and blindness on the part of some who wrongly reassigned them. Such stories, unending though they appear to be, are fair enough. But also that the sexual abuse of minors is presented as a tragedy unique to the church alone. Bullshit! No one has said that the church is the only one out there abusing little boys and raping little boys. No one has said that. What Archbishop Dolan can't seem to find his way around, however, is the fact that someone who does it to a little boy and on the grounds that God is telling me to do it, and you need to bend over, son, because God wants you to, is an especially sickening, vile, morally bankrupt, ethically dead individual in the service of an organization that may well be equally so, as long as it continues to make excuses for it, as Archbishop Dolan is doing here.
He then says, the sexual abuse of our young people is an international, cultural, societal horror. It affects every religion, country, family, job, profession, vocation, and ethnic group. But every country, family, job, profession, vocation, and ethnic group does not claim to be the sole voice of Almighty God on planet Earth. We Catholics have for a decade apologized, cried, reached out, shouted mea culpa, and engaged in a comprehensive reform that is met with widespread acclaim. By whom? Who out there actually thinks that the church is trying to do anything, something, aside from quietly settling lawsuits about this? This is not the part where you talk about how good you've been about getting it right. Shouted mea culpa. Oh, my aching Jesus. Mea culpa, mea culpa, mea maxima culpa. We're all better now. Man, look at him. That little guy looks pretty sweet. He goes on and asserts that while the church may have been an example of how not to respond to this tragedy in the past, the church is now a model of what to do. Really? Have you started? I don't know. Have you stopped? Have you stopped browbeating people for being gay? No, you haven't. Have you allowed your priesthood to engage in the normal, ordinary, utterly human and typical manifestations of love and marriage? No, you haven't. Have you allowed women to enter the clergy, thereby taking up some of the slack away from pedophiles who gravitate to the priesthood because it's so damned easy to get their jollies there? No, haven't done that either. No, not even a little bit. Nope, sorry. Have you stopped claiming, has the church stopped claiming, for instance, that pedophile priests are gay? Haven't stopped doing that either. So I'd like to know, Archbishop Dolan, just where it is that you see that the church's efforts to come to grips with this horror are a model of what to do. I have a feeling that in waiting for an explanation along those lines, we will be waiting a very, very, very long time. It's 23 minutes before the hour, and if you want to jump in on the conversation for this Friday on the front porch, you are absolutely more than welcome to do so. You know the number. Toll free, it's 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on, H-E-A-D-O-N, or on your nickel, 304-658-3333. Email comes in to Bob Kincaid, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D. And, well, we're here. Where are you? Light them up if you want to. It's Friday on the front porch. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob.
Hey, Sandra.
Oh, my God. No, did you read that E.J. Dionne article about the church?
No.
Let me just read this one little line. It's just like he's talking about the church needs to show it understands the flaws of its own internal culture by examining its consciousness, blah, blah, blah. And he goes on to say, enemies of the church will use this scandal to discredit the institution no matter what the Vatican does. I mean, are you kidding me? You know, writing articles about how the church should navigate. I mean, this is some sick-ass shit. And they're trying to say that he's old. I don't give a, you know what, it's unbelievable the sort of eggshells people are walking on in this disgusting institution.
Well, what if he's old and sick was a defense, and it's not. He's old and sick is not a defense to having been a Nazi war criminal. Didn't we prove that with John Demjanjuk?
Please, exactly. And I mean, he's not dead. If he was dead, that would be the end of it because he's dead. Otherwise, as long as this fool is breathing, and the fact that they can't say rape, that's a really good point. It's like the protection racket is on, you know, via the media. I'm sick of it. We went through this stuff with the church here in the U.S. It went on and on and on. It's so disgusting. And now it just keeps flaring up like a pimple. It's just hideous, you know?
Well, and it won't go away, Sandra, until such time as they get rid. And has the church talked to anybody in a 12-step movement? You know, you got to acknowledge it.
I mean, what is up? What is the problem? I mean, it's so evil. It's just beyond evil. I don't, because the children, you see what I mean? It's just, I don't know what it is. Because they have young kids in their care, parents thinking, well, this is the way I should direct the spiritual health and awareness of my child. I mean, it is just beyond the beyond. It makes me sick.
And, well, you know, I just can't, Sandra, I just can't get past the fact that Cardinal, then Cardinal Ratzinger, was the author, not some deputy, but he was the author of a document that told the bishops around the world to cover up sexual abuse and to threaten parents and victims with excommunication if they didn't shut up. How did that get past the vetting process when all the old, you know, when all the old cardinals were, I don't know what it is they smoke in there that sends up the colored smoke and stuff, but how did it get past?
Well, no, and it's just sort of like, you know, what can I say? I'm not Catholic, you know, I know very little about it except for this flare-up that keeps coming up and the Godfather 3 movie. Now, I don't mean to be, you know, childish about it, but the institution is whack. They're not worth, they're not, it's a horrible institution.
And here's the fun part. Sandra, they operate outside the law.
No, it's totally. I mean, the idea that they can, you know, figure out how to chastise or punish the various rapists and have it be okay, where's law? How come law don't figure in this? I'm confused.
Well, me too. And again, you know, I said give credit where credit is due because these couple of priests in Wisconsin said, hey, we want to have a church trial for this old creep. Well, he didn't need a church trial.
Well, no, this ain't.
He needed to be indicted, arraigned, and and tried before a jury of his peers, which does not mean priests; it means fellow citizens.
No, well, last I heard, we were operating in a nation state, so I don't know what they're talking about with church trials. It's not even funny, except it's just sick. And that's supposed to what? Satisfy the victims, the public. You know what I mean? No, they need to go to trial like anybody else would, you know?
Yeah, you know, with the law and order noise, dum-dum, you know, in the background.
No, I mean, when are these kids supposed to get justice? And this Pope, Lord, he's slimy. You know, he needs to go away. How do they remove a Pope?
Well, I don't think a Pope has been removed from office since, like, the year 1016. And they did that to him because they caught him... they caught him profit skimming.
Oh. Well, listen, I mean, the thing is, it's even hard to get outraged because of the history of the Catholic Church. I mean, it's a really disgusting institution that's been on the wrong side so many times, including this pig who was a Nazi. Wasn't he Nazi youth?
Yes, he was. Hitler youth.
Hitler, yeah, I mean...
And he manned an anti-aircraft gun whose purpose was to shoot Allied aircraft out of the sky.
No, he did not.
Yes, he did.
Listen, okay, well, no, but it's just...
You know, because by the time the war was ending, they were down to the 14-year-olds manning the anti-aircraft batteries. They really were. I mean, you know, the photographs are out there of Hitler, you know, walking up and patting the little boy on the cheek, you know.
Well, that's what happens. I mean, you know, the children becoming soldiers. But, I mean, this guy has so much to answer for. I don't understand. How did he creep in the line? Ah, you know, how is he the Pope after the one that kicked off? Now, I know there's issues with him, but at least that one seemed to have some integrity.
Well, that one alleged John Paul II, you know, worked in the resistance to some degree.
At least he's on that side of history. Even if he was conservative and homophobic and misogynist and all the things that are just acceptable with these popes, this freak here is way up north. He's way
back up just a minute, Sandra, because this is rather interesting. Now, Pope John Paul II is given tremendous credit for the weight of authority that he gave to the Solidarność, solidarity movement in Poland that broke the back of Poland's status as a satellite state to the Soviet Union,
yeah.
Right?
Mm.
You know, the whole strike that began with Lech Wałęsa in the Gdansk shipyards, all of that stuff.
Sure.
And he's given great credit for the weight that he led to it, and the fact that, you know, he basically made it impossible for the Soviets to just stomp Wałęsa and the labor movement and have done with it. Okay.
Right.
Now, the Polish government was a what kind of government? Communist? Right?
Yep.
Okay. John Paul II was also instrumental in raising to sainthood an openly fascist priest named Jose Maria Escriva, who was the originator of Opus Dei. He raised him to sainthood.
Oh, okay.
Fascists always hate what? Communists?
Yeah.
Hitler standing in the ashes of the Reichstag, screaming, Das ist die Arbeiten von Kommunisten?
Yeah, and then they produce that poor retard trying to say he burned it down.
Yeah, right.
Communist, right.
Yeah. It all begins to fit together. With all, you know, and I'm not talking about paranoid conspiracy theory or anything, but, you know, it stands to reason that John Paul II would have stood up to communism. Because A, he was a Pole, and B, he was a virulent anti-communist because he was, in fact, a fascist.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Okay, well, so we can agree that that particular institution is fairly corrupt, and I don't imagine Obama's going to be taking a trip to the Vatican anytime soon.
Not again. The one was enough. Thanks.
Have we been there already?
Oh, don't you remember when Michelle had to put on the mantilla and...
Right, I blotted, you know, once again, you know how you just blot it out.
I know. The human mind's ability to attempt to deal with horror is truly amazing, Sandra.
It is amazing, because I surely, you're right. Listen, anyway, I just was, you know, I just couldn't, just your discussion about it, I just think about it, it's just so disgusting. I mean, there's hundreds of victims, Bob, hundreds, and they just keep
thousands. Look at the scandal in Ireland.
Yeah, the Irish thing is just off the hook. I mean, I keep getting...
The worst part of it is that, you know, there are civil and secular law enforcement authorities who would do the right thing. But it goes beyond the, and I think maybe in many ways this is the greater horror of it, Sandra, is that it's not just that the church was chock-a-block with kiddie rapists, it's that it was chock-a-block with little Eichmanns, to paraphrase Hannah Arendt, little Eichmanns who administratively covered up for them. It's the cover-up. It's, you know, it's the same thing that it was with Nixon and with Iran-Contra. It's, the, you know, the initial crime was kind of small potatoes, but it's the cover-up.
Well, no, and it's also, and it's the apologists from E.J. Dionne to these other people in the media. It's just like, you know what? Don't write anything, because they just come across as really slimy. It's like, don't talk about how the church needs to right its ship. It's corrupt through and through, from the top Nazi Pope on down.
That's my point, Sandra. You know, yes, first of all, the priests, the ones who are doing the buggery, the rape, see, I did it again. I found a cute little euphemism for it. The raping priests need to be tried, convicted, and put in a nasty, nasty prison. And that really goes against the grain of my feeling about the prison industrial complex in this country, but...
Yeah, well, no, but I mean...
Secondarily, you have to start doing the really hard book work of dropping subpoenas ducis tecum all over the church and following the paper trail and indicting every last priest up the line including the Bishop of Rome himself, if need be, in order to root out the criminal enterprise that created the atmosphere that allows for little boys to be raped. The cover-up is the greater crime.
And, you know, what sort of Pasolini-type setup is going on in Vatican City? You know, with the even the adults.
Remember when they shuffled Bernard Law off to a nice little cushy job in the Vatican specifically to get him outside the criminal jurisdiction of the United States of America?
Yeah, you know, I haven't heard that name in a while. That bastard is in the Vatican, Ben.
He may have shuffled off this mortal coil. But
he was so slimy. But the thing is, it doesn't seem to be any end. And I find it very entertaining that it just keeps popping up. Even in the Financial Times, they're covering this.
Yeah, and at no point can anybody inside the hierarchy of the church say, you know, maybe it's the way we set up our priesthood. Maybe that's the problem. Because they've convinced themselves that Jesus told them to do this, when there is not a blessed thing in Scripture that supports that position.
Yeah, no, it's just ridiculous. I mean, and what's the manifestation is just so damaging, and all the poor children. I'm sorry, I can't wrap my head around it. It's sickening.
No, and no amount of monetary settlement, which they can account for it. Which, by the way, the church absolutely lawyers up and fights tooth and toenail for every last, every last talent or penny to keep it out of the hands of the victims. If you're the church, why are you showing up with a lawyer?
Oh, exactly. No, I mean it is. It's just. I don't know. It's just another huge institution that's totally hollowed out and corrupt, you know? And the fact that these people can't be punished under our system of laws is really disturbing me.
It is a straight up nightmare horror, and again, you know, I've got a thought, some thoughts about the Constitution itself that I may share a little bit later, but again, you know, the framers did not presuppose that they were crafting a perfect document in the Constitution, and they did not presuppose that the Bill of Rights was perfect either. And frankly, maybe we have over the years overly broadly interpreted the First Amendment's protection of religion. Maybe the right wing's a little bit correct in that, only, you know, right for the wrong reasons. Maybe the separation of church and state it doesn't appear in the Constitution, you know, which has an element of truth to it. Those words don't appear in the First Amendment, but they are clearly implied. But maybe we've interpreted it overly broadly, such that, you know, we've given religious institutions greater depth and greater weight than they deserve, such that we have hesitated to come after them on a religious basis. You know, we'll go after some freak who's out there, you know, Jim Baker, who's out there hustling money down the water slide for Jesus. But to go after a wholly and entirely criminal conspiracy that's covering up the rape of little boys, not so much.
Yeah, because it's incredible to watch. And I'm just, you know, curious to see how far the apologists in the New York Times and all the other sort of, you know, major media outlets, how far are they going to take it? Because it doesn't seem to be any end to it. But listen, there's something else I wanted to mention to you.
Sure.
It looks like Murdoch is, you know, going to start charging for all his papers and websites. And I was just like, I can't wait, because good luck to him. You know what I'm saying?
Hopefully it will drive his web traffic down to almost zero.
Yeah, I think that he's dreaming if he thinks that he's going to be able to change that train, you know?
You know, I have to wonder, because when it was unveiled not too long back, the iPad from Apple was said to be the salvation of print media, because New York Times and everybody was going to have a deal with the iPad for delivery of their content. And Apple was going to determine how much was paid and so forth and so on.
Yeah.
You reckon Rupert's got a deal with Apple yet?
Well, the thing is that I still think that the web is just too huge, and there's too many other ways of getting your information. For example, the New York Times is going to put their walls up again, and I will happily shift over to the Guardian. They have no intention of doing it, ever. You see what I'm saying?
Yes, I do.
And I will be there, and I'll be fine. And I think that these entities, I understand that the newspaper model is dying, and the way they generate income is, you know, not happening anymore. But if they think they're going to be able to wall up the internet, and that we the sheeple is just going to pony up, no thanks. There's no way. I just don't. I mean, I could be wrong, but I think that it's a. I don't know. I don't see how it's going to work.
I don't either. But again, everybody's putting their faith in Apple. At least where the iPad's concerned, and because, you know, from the minute that the internet was mentioned and we all remember the internet tech bubble and all that stuff, you know, everybody was going to get rich off the internet, but nobody had figured out quite how to.
Yeah, well, you know, the whole thing with the AT&T, you know, iPhone, they've driven huge amounts of customers away with all their requirements for, you know, paying a certain fee for the internet access. People are just not doing it. They're, you know, I just think that initially people try out, but as, you know, apps are developed and other ways of getting information comes about, I don't know. I could be wrong, but if you look on the internet as far as news, oh my God, there is so many ways of getting it. Murdoch may be a huge mogul and run a huge conglomerate, but he's not going to force me or you to pay money for content. I just don't see it.
Well, I can't imagine what content Rupert Murdoch has that I would ever be interested in seeing. Well, okay, because I'm a geek, and I have to say this. Fox Sports does a decent job with its sports coverage, and its sports webpage is pretty good. But I'd never pay for it. There's no way. There's absolutely no way I would pay anything that I recognize puts money, overtly puts money into Rupert Murdoch's demon-infested pockets.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I just sort of, you know, because they're making a big splash about it that, you know, starting June. And it's just sort of like, okay, you know?
Yeah, what did Jerry Seinfeld say? Good luck with all that.
Well, and also the whole sort of, you know, I understand what you're saying with the Apple thing, because that's sort of what they did with the music. Is that the thing?
Yeah.
You know, they sort of got everyone tied into the iTunes.
Right.
I mean, I don't really know who's making money. Are the artists actually getting a fairly decent percentage yet?
Well, it depends on how you get it to iTunes.
Mm-hmm.
If you get it to since everything that's on that we have on iTunes, like, you know, podcasts or whatever, is all free, we have no idea. But I don't know what kind of a cut Apple gets out of it. But I'm sure that they're not doing it out of the generosity of their heart. They're a corporation, lest we forget.
Yeah, no, I mean, and I understand what you're saying about the iTable or whatever that business is. I heard a report how some of the major publishing houses, you know, do have little deals there so they can reduce a book down to $10. This is the idea.
Yeah, which is going to, you know, that's going to be, you know, and come on. You and I have talked about economic models on a number of occasions, Sandra. Who in God's name thinks that if a publisher saves itself X amount of dollars on, you know, dead tree publications, who thinks that that's really going to go to the author, you know, to the artist? It wouldn't be me. I don't know. No, that, because business doesn't work that way.
Well, no, and also, you know, I think that is a frightening prospect. I mean, you work and you put a book together, and then they're going to be telling you, oh, we're going to sell it for $10 a pop, and you get, what, 20 cents?
There you go.
And it's just sort of like, who's going to want to sit there and put life's blood into something like that with that sort of payoff?
Frankly, I don't
wonder. I'm asking. I mean, you know, how artists and intellectuals or whoever are going to be beat down to the point where
at the base level, what you're really discussing, if I may, Sandra, is the creative process, because art doesn't just happen. You know, you can't expect to get Michelangelo out of a guy who has to work his butt off 12 hours a day just trying to earn his or her daily bread. Artists have to be free to be artists. And anything that impinges on the ability of an artist to go out and do art essentially means that you are, you know, you might be cheapening the bottom line in some sort of Milton Friedman-esque manner, but you are certainly not enabling or ennobling art in and of itself, you know, ars gratia artis. Or at least, you know, it strikes me that way.
I mean, I don't, you know, and it's obviously intellectual property and all that sort of business, you know, is, you know, like a new frontier, at least as far as the internet is concerned. And also, on some levels, if you can eliminate the publishing houses, to me, great. If people can find a way to get their art from what they did to the buying or interested public beyond the iTablets and all that BS, more power to them, you know?
Sure.
I use iTunes, but I often do wonder, you know, well, really, how much are these people getting, you know?
And I don't know. If you go directly to it, if you go directly to the, you know, if you create the art and take it directly to the dissemination point, then it's strictly a business deal between, you know, you and Apple. But if there's some label executive who needs to make sure that he gets kept in his lobster lunches, then obviously, yeah, you're getting back down toward that 20 cents, that 20 cents for the artist model you were talking about.
Yeah, well, I mean, well, anyway, I just sort of, I don't know, that sort of popped in my mind with the Murdoch, because, you know, it's being framed as if this is really going to test the waters, and, you know, I don't really know, because I don't even think as large as Murdoch is, it's going to penetrate the idea that the public is going to say, oh, yeah, here you go, Mr. Murdoch, here's money over the internet for you. No.
No, can't. Just can't.
No. Hey, so anyway, I guess I'm sure you have other people, so I'll let you go, but I see your Mountaineers, man, that's some ugly basketball, dude.
We were real ugly last night. We were bad ugly.
Oh my good Lord.
I haven't seen them play that way since the first of the season. And I frankly didn't think it would throw them for that big a loop to have Truck Bryant out of the lineup. But apparently it did.
Well, and they're playing the Thugs, is that what's up?
Yeah, the Cats. Yeah, John Calipari or Calipari.
Oh boy! That's interesting.
The thing is, yeah, that's tomorrow. If they don't take care of the if WVU doesn't take care of the basketball, and lets Kentucky steal it from them 23 or 26 times, whatever it was they let Washington do, then Kentucky's going to be playing half court street ball, and it'll be 120. It'll be 120-35.
Oh shoot! Yeah, well, I guess you really don't know what you're going to be getting with these games, which is why it's so exciting. But so what? Now they're in the Elite Eight? Or
yeah, the Field of Eight.
Wow.
And there's four more games tonight to finish off the Field of Eight.
Oh, okay, and then it starts anew tomorrow, right?
Yeah, the eight starts right. They start onto the four games that make up the Field of Eight tomorrow.
I might have to fight.
Two games tomorrow and two games Sunday. And then I guess that'll establish the final four and what, next week?
Isn't it next weekend? Is that the last weekend or is it two?
Yeah, it ends because you get two final four games and then you get the national championship.
Oh, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, maybe they just extend it and end it in the middle of the week, in which case, yes, we will interrupt the program if the Mountaineers go any further.
I know, I was laughing when you said you had to go. I'm like, oh, boy.
I'm shallow. I'm sorry.
Listen, we got to do what is going to give us some sort of pleasure in this mess. And the only other thing, listen, the conservatives or whatever them people are called, they are losing it over this health care thing. I mean, it is not, it's a pro-business bill. Why are they losing it so much? You got any quick thoughts about that? Because I've never seen anything like it. It's hilarious.
Well, I'll take the short and easy route. Every objection to everything the Democrats do, and I realize this is overly simplistic, but they overreact to everything. If Barack Obama was pushing for legislation that said we're going to rescue all the little kitty cats from all the trees, there would be right wing hysteria that tied that to where it's going socialist kitty cat rescue and plants, communism, fascism, Nazis. And why? Come on, Sandry, you know the answer. Because the black man wants to do it.
Yeah, I mean, I hate to think that it's always reduced to that. But
it is. It is.
It seems to be. It's incredible.
If there was a free ice cream on Sunday for every American, Bill, it would be fascist, communist, socialism. Because...
of the darkie.
And frankly, you know, there's evidence for this. I'm not, you know, I don't just say things. There's evidence for this, Sandra. You know, Orrin Hatch.
Oh, boy.
I just love that. Orrin Hatch had to have it dragged out of him by Andrea Mitchell. You know, I mean, come on, it's Andrea Mitchell. And she's having to beat up Orrin Hatch to get him to admit that 17 years ago, in opposing Hillary Care, he counter-proposed a plan that would have forced every American to buy commercial insurance. Just like Charles Grassley did. I mean, let's see, what else did it do? Would have required everyone to buy coverage. It would have capped awards for medical malpractice lawsuits, established minimum benefit packages, and invested in comparative effectiveness research. Now, that plan back then was touted by the Republicans as being a sane response to Hillary Care, and it's what we can do if you'll just kill the Hillary Care bill. Just start over, and this is what we'll do, right?
Isn't that what Obama just did?
It's exactly what he just did.
I mean, you know, it's a completely Republican-inspired plan is what has just been passed, as far as I can tell.
And so, consequently, I can't help saying, Sandra, what's different except the fact that the guy who wants it done is
not white. And also, I guess the Republicans realize that, you know, they're talking about they can run against it, but I don't see how they can if those few little items kick in.
And, you know, Hatch's excuse for this? You got to love this, Sandra. Well, we were fighting Hillary Care at that time, and I don't think anyone centered on it. I certainly didn't. That was 17 years ago. I mean, isn't this the same excuse as the church gave for the Wisconsin priest? It was 20 years ago.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my God. No, it is. It's always the same. Well, listen, Bob, listen, have a good show, and I'm going to check out that game for sure.
All right, good deal. Take care and have a good weekend.
You too, bye-bye.
See you, Sandra. Bye. Calling from California, that's our pal, Sandra. What else is there? When you actually coldly, soberly, and logically examine all of the facts, what else is there besides, oh, my God, the president's a black man? It's like something out of Blazing Saddles. I said the president's a... Yeah. Because, you know, it's one of those after you have excluded the impossible, whatever is left, however improbable, is most likely the solution. You know, straight out of Sherlock Holmes. You can't just blink away the racism that runs not even under the current, not even as a subtext. You can't just blink away the racism that is the very raison d'être of the Republican Party. It just is what it is. William writing in says, all of these endless horrors make it difficult for me to breathe. You can almost place every horror in their various degrees in one enormous binder titled Man Without Conscience, The Never-Ending Story. You can place these religious child rapes, these wars without justification, hate crimes, the list is endless, yet they all point to some sort of mindset that completely escapes me as a human being. In each and every case, monetary settlement never rectifies the damage done. Money is not a memory eraser. Oh, well, you were raped in church. Here's $100,000. Forget about it. Move on. Oh, well, you lost half your brain in some mindless war. Here's $50,000. All's well now. Somehow this doesn't quite cut it, says William, and I agree. It's astonishing. Ron and Raleigh writing, hey, Bob, do you think this comes down to the difference between Petros and Petrus? The entire Catholic Church is built upon a mistranslation. I wonder, you know, upon this rock. Oh, there's a great joke that goes with that. I'll save it for another day. With regard to the difference between an ordinary human being raping a little boy and a priest raping a little boy, our critic at large, Reverbo, says, Sandra mentioned a great point. These perpetrators were in a position of trust involving a minor. It's considered an aggravator. I used to be in this business, says Reverbo, and that makes it an aggravated assault, which means the crime takes on additional charges and the most severe scrutiny, and sentences are subsequently harsher if convicted. It's unbelievable how they claim to operate outside the law. And they do, because every time one of these rapist priests pops up, the church, you know, puts its little hand over its mouth and gasps, really? We had no idea. Who'd have thunk it? We've got an all-male institution that provides absolute secrecy for its priests, and that they would use that secrecy to go and rape little boys. What is the world coming to? And until you start putting the people who are saying that crap in prison, the problem persists. It just does. Seems kind of, self-evident? Yeah. So that's the start of the program. That's the first hour and 12 minutes. We'll take a little break. I was reminded that there was a song that goes ever so well with all of this. The temptation is to save it for a prayer meeting Wednesday, but I just can't. I just can't. Our buddy Michael, Kid A in the chat room, reminded me of this earlier today. I think I mentioned, although not nearly enough, there is a new Drive-By Truckers album out. It's called The Big To-Do. And I've got a track from you. I've got a track for you from it right now. You need to own this album. This is a dandy. And obliquely works within the context of everything we've been talking about. Sorry, computer noises. This is a track called The Wig He Made Her Wear. I think you'll figure out where it comes from. If Bob can make it play. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is The Horn. And we'll be back with more of Friday on the Front Porch. You know the phone numbers, I hope. Got something to say? Something to bring to the conversation? Get with it. Dial them up. We'll be back.
cuts, anything I had seen was a pillar of town. His reputation was clean. It was right before Easter in the first week of spring. Didn't show up for service that Wednesday night. The congregation knew something weren't right. But on the bed when they opened the door, the preacher was dead on the bedroom floor. And everyone knew there had to be some outside thing that made this happen.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future. The future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org. or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95.
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance, and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head-on with Bob Kincaid. Minutes past the hour on this Friday on the front porch. I guess you guys are going to hang me out to dry and leave me to filibobster the rest of the night or night away. Oh, well. Kate loved the trucker's song, the wig he made her wear. Oh, this is delicious, she says. Pink Glocks or rusty chainsaws. Another sister gets revenge. Accident. Three times in the back while he slept. Yeehaw. See, those old boys are sometimes going to, one of these days, going to learn not to mess with us. Yeah, if you don't recall, this happened a couple or 3 years ago in the sleepy little Tennessee town of Selmer, also the home of, or where arose the legendary tale of Buford Pusser. Remember Walking Tall? I think it still holds the record in the Shoals area of Alabama for longest running movie of all time. No kidding. Well, in Selmer, Tennessee, there was a righteous, upright, holier-than-thou, God-fearing Church of Christer preacher. And if you've never had the joy of living in a town that's controlled by the Church of Christ, well, you haven't lived fundamentalism, brother and sister. And the preacher's wife one day just got a shotgun and shot him in the back and blew him away. When they put her on trial, she brought out the stripper heels that he made her wear and the wig that he made her wear and talked about how he could only have sex with her if she was dressed up like some sort of tramp. And she killed him. Oh, life among the moral set. And by the way, she's already out of prison. It's done. Because, as Patterson Hood noted so eloquently, when they saw that wig he made her wear, everybody understood that there is an unstated and unwritten law in the South called the bastard had it coming to him, or some bitch had it coming to him. In fact, it's remarked upon in Harper Lee's brilliant masterpiece, To Kill a Mockingbird. She cites it as the early reason that her daddy, Atticus, developed a distaste for doing the criminal law.
because he would, as a lawyer, try to get the best deal he could for his clients. But in one particular case, they insisted upon standing upon the defense of some bitch had it coming. And you know what? It doesn't have to be codified. No jury in the South will ever be instructed on it. They just know it. It's ingrained. Had it coming to them. Welcome. Tell her it was voluntary, involuntary manslaughter brought about by insanity. He had it coming. It's a great album, The Big To-Do, and you can get it directly at drivebytruckers.com, and I encourage you to. They just don't know how to do bad work, the gang from the Drive-By Truckers. They just don't. Other stuff to do on this Friday on the front porch, but first and foremost, let us go straightway, or not, to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, how you doing?
Pretty good. Jim, how about you?
Okay. Just a few things. I don't have a lot to say tonight.
Sure.
Number one, the Roman Catholic Church's attitude toward sexuality is one, to say the very least, couched in ambivalence and hypocrisy. And do you remember Kinsey and his report in the 50s or the late 40s, early 50s?
Oh, absolutely.
Well, you know, when he published, well, he did one on among men, and whether he got the one on women published, I'm not sure. I don't know. There's a very good movie out with Liam Neeson describing this man's life and what he went through. But the Catholic Church was definitely not in his corner. Neither was J. Edgar Hoover, by the way. And secondly, I can remember back in the 70s and 80s when gay Catholics tried to make themselves or allow themselves to be accepted in a group called Dignity. And the church was, you know, completely told those people they didn't want them.
Yeah, go away.
Go away. And yet, by the same, and then, of course, they vehemently opposed gay marriage. Well, okay. But yet, they have these stances, and yet they allow this stuff not only to go on, but also to cover it up. Now, that's really something.
It is that and ever so much more. Because, Jim, what we're talking about here really is it is the fruits of a criminal enterprise. If you or I or anybody else tried to hide a rapist from the reach of the law, we would be charged as accessories to one degree or another, either before or after the fact. But we would be charged as accessories and perhaps even co-conspirators.
Well, I'm no scholar of the law, but don't the civil courts supersede any type of ecclesiastical court?
Yes, they do, but that presupposes the willingness of the organization, in this case the church, to acknowledge it. I mean, this is a disagreement that goes as far back as Henry II and Thomas a Becket.
Well, that's exactly what it was about, was because Becket would not allow that priest to, or excommunicated an English lord who had murdered a Catholic priest. And, of course, Henry II wanted to have that priest brought before his civil courts. And, of course, he and Becket had a parting of the ways on that, which ultimately resulted in Henry saying, well, no one rid me of this meddlesome priest. And, of course, they did. But Henry, of course, had to go to Canterbury every year around this time or around April to receive lashes in front of Becket's sepulcher.
Right.
But I don't understand how they can, the church can hide these people. I mean, doesn't it appear to you that once a complaint has been made that they would have to not only have discovery, which could lead to indictment and trial?
Well, there's the civil arm, and then there's the criminal arm. And frankly, look what happened. Look what happened when the law started getting just a little too close to Bernard Law in Boston. What did they do?
They took him away and put him in Rome, buried him somewhere in the Vatican.
Yeah, where he was beyond the territorial reach of the United States, and no extradition. Imagine that.
We don't have extradition agreements with the Vatican.
Apparently not.
Must not.
And that's
that really boggles the mind, their ambivalence and their hypocrisy on this particular subject. And like I say, when they rejected gay people who wanted to be a part of their church and prevented this to continue, knowing fully well that it was going on, I don't understand that.
Well, I'm afraid I do. Because, you know, institutions as they grow become self-perpetuating and self-protecting. This has nothing to do with the message of Jesus Christ, Jim. It has everything to do with the protection of the institution.
Well, it's parochialism to the tenth power.
Yes, absolutely. Great word. Perfect word. Because frankly, it's all of it. Every last bit of it is rooted, and you know, this, when I was talking with Sandra, I somewhat jokingly said, you know, have they ever talked to anybody who's ever been involved with the 12-step program? The first thing you got to do is acknowledge that you got a problem. And the church will not acknowledge that they have a problem. They're acknowledging that they have a symptom, I suppose, because they say, well, you know, we've had the church, you know, has acknowledged the fact that they've had this absolute pandemic of rapist priests, but they have not sought to figure out why they have that. That is a symptom of the disease and not the disease itself. The disease that the church suffers from is profound sexual dysfunction.
Of course it is. And, you know, at one time, priests were allowed to marry and have families. And then somewhere along the line...
Well, Jim, at one time, priests were allowed to marry other priests.
Well...
Who were also men.
They would do away with that because... Number one, when the priest died, if he had a family, his possessions would go to the members of his family. And the church said, well, let's make him celibate and not allow him to marry, and therefore all the property will have to go to the church.
Unless, of course, you were really, really high up on the chain of command, you know, along the line of, say, you know, the Borgias.
Well, yeah.
And
I mean, my God, how many children do they have? And
there you go.
Things of that nature. And
what was that? Pope Alexander? Was that who he was?
Alexander the Sixth.
Yeah. Okay. Okay.
The one who established a line of demarcation between Spain and Portugal. I mean, he really felt it was only important that he could divide the world between two countries, didn't he?
That's feeling pretty froggy about your own abilities and your own power, without a doubt. I know that our buddy Eugene Finnerman over at FinnermanWorks.com has written about this at some length as well. But what, you know, what this all boils down to is, and you know what, Jim, maybe it arises out of the nature of their own hagiography. I don't want to go too far afield into this, but religious history is what religious history is. And I'm not talking about hagiography. I'm talking about the fact that, for instance, if you set down the Gospels and you read them, you'll read all the story in there about how Jesus was born of a virgin and so forth. You know, we know the story. But then if you pick up the letters of St. Paul, he's never mentions it once. Not once. But they latched onto the virgin birth, and when your whole religion arises out of an individual who had to have been created sexually somehow, but then you deny the sexuality, when the very foundation of it is a denial of sexuality, any sexuality that rises from it is going to be compromised, isn't it?
Well, yeah, I guess so.
I mean, do you see what I'm saying?
I do. And, of course, the doctrine of virgin birth and things like that, those are basically rooted in faith and things of that nature.
Right.
I don't have a problem with it. Well, I do have a problem with what has been going on with one priest sexually molesting 200 deaf boys. Is that correct?
Yes.
And then, of course, the millions of dollars, or it's almost in the billions, I guess. I don't know how much money that the church has had to shell out in these lawsuits have been brought. And they've done that kicking and screaming. And It is beyond my realm of comprehension. It really is. I mean, if priests were allowed to marry and to have families,
as the Greek Orthodox Church and the Roman Orthodox or the Russian Orthodox and all the other orthodoxies allow,
of course they do. Of course, the Catholic Church says, well, if he has a family, he can't care, he cannot take care of his pastoral flock.
And yet, oddly enough, the Greek Church has acknowledged that celibate priests are not necessarily the best priests.
Well, how can a man advise spiritually and in a secular way about family matters and things like this if he himself has never been married? And how can they talk about abortion and the rearing of children and things of that nature when they themselves have never been allowed to father a child? And yet they're supposed to be the person that the married people go to get marital counseling in certain respects, but yet he himself has never been married. That doesn't make any sense to me.
And nor should it. It only makes sense if you are fully imbued with the sexual dysfunction and happy with and accepting of the sexual dysfunction that forms the very core of the Roman Catholic Church.
That's the misogyny added to that.
Oh,
makes it more complex for me to understand.
And you know what? We got slapped in the face with it during the debate over the health care bill when Bart Stupak, who calls himself a Democrat but not really, when Bart Stupak came out and said, "Look, I'm listening to the bishops because they understand the needs of the unborn. Those 59,000 women don't." Can you imagine, Jim? Can you imagine? It's stunning.
Well, it's ignorance and arrogance. And, you know, it's just, like I say, all these things just don't make a whole lot of sense to me. And it's, like I say, ambivalence coupled with hypocrisy and just lack of morality totally.
Well, without a doubt. And that's, you know, when you get down to lack of morality inside a church, that church has a lot of problems, without a doubt.
It does.
Especially when it holds itself out as being perfect.
Yeah, they do, don't they? Well, they're far from it, and I just don't understand how they can, like I say, that's the reason I would hope they would have Vatican III and try to reform some of these things. But as you pointed out, they might try to further re-entrench or retrench and be more atavistic about these things. I don't know. It's crazy.
It is that. Jim, have yourself. Yes.
One last thing. I saw this thing on the internet. And I started laughing, and I sent it to a couple of friends of mine. And they had some golf tournament in South Africa. And did you see the thing about the man who was standing outside the perimeter of the golf course nude?
No.
Mm-hmm. I don't know if he belonged to one of these clothing optional institutions or whatever, but they were very upset because it was distracting the golfers when they tried to tee. And I guess
that'll definitely make your putter flutter.
Well, I guess you can't call for a mulligan if you play by the strict rules of golf if you see a nude person running across the golf course or whatever.
Four.
But right.
No, two.
They actually had his picture on the internet. He's standing outside the golf course just looking in, and, you know, these guys were trying to tee off. And I said, oh, my Lord. And I said, well, you know, tee his own. If that's what he wants to do, that's fine with me. But I thought I would just end this conversation on a lighter note, okay?
Very good, Jim. Thank you very much.
So
I'm not golfing in South Africa. Yeah, I don't care. Y'all can't make me.
Well, you know, hell, like I say, it's what people want to do, but
my game's compromised enough as it is.
Yeah, I can understand that. I can.
Thank you, Jim, and have a good weekend.
Same to you.
All right, bye now. That's our buddy Jim. And Jim mentioned at the beginning of our conversation Alfred Kinsey. Well, there's still a Kinsey Institute, and they still do research on sexual attitudes and sexuality in America. And they released the results of a new study not too long back. I was reading about this in one of Mark Morford's columns Mark Morford being one of my gotta reads. Just brilliant. Just brilliant. But he highlighted this report out from the Kinsey Institute, and lo and behold, and apparently this applies, I don't know if this applies only to the state of Indiana or can you, or whether you can extrapolate this into the rest of the nation. The Kinsey people did a survey, a recent survey, of like 250 people in Indiana on the question of what is sex. And the bizarre part of it is that there was no consensus. As Morford notes, it's everything from something hot, sticky, and sweaty to finding a really good bargain at Pottery Barn. Indianans, and I suspect that probably means most of America, aren't quite sure what sex is. So the right-wingers need to shut up whenever they feel like maybe they'd like to make another joke about how Bill Clinton said it depends on what the definition of is. Because the rest of the country doesn't know either. That's why legal codes that have to do with things like rape are very specific. By inserting, touching, or blah blah, the blah blah of someone's blah blah with someone else's blah blah. Because we're really not sure. Wow. Just for your consideration, because it's Friday on the front porch. It's about 20 minutes before the hour. You know how to reach the program, 877-443-2366. 877-443-2366. Or on your nickel, if you want to save us a little money, 304-658-3333. And we go back to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hello, Bobby.
Hey, Juanita, what's up?
Well, first of all, I'd like to say something about the song.
Yes.
I thought it was amazing. I love lyrics, that have real meaning, and the musicality of those people are amazing. It's very unique, too.
Yeah, well, the musicianship, the truckers just get better and better and better. And frankly, both of the primary songwriters in the band, namely Patterson Hood and Mike Cooley, are poets. They really are poets.
Oh, yeah. I love lyrics, and I love good music. And put them together, and good play it. But it's really amazing, and it tells a tale. It was funny that I was thinking the other day about the way the Republicans were trying to turn it around, about what they've been through and all, and about how we Democrats are using the rock throwing and so forth. For political purposes,
right?
And
we like a rock. We that's great for business,
yeah.
Getting rocks put through windows.
Oh sure, and we it reminded me of like like a lot of women that the husbands are beat up and they'll say, "Look what you made me do."
Yeah,
they try to turn it around, and a lot of times the woman believes it.
It's a function of physical violence is almost always hand in hand accompanied by mental violence, mental abuse.
Oh yeah.
And I forget what the old statistic was I heard once upon a time. On average, a woman who is a victim of domestic violence will report that, will experience that domestic violence 4 times before she either gets out of the relationship or gets killed.
Yeah.
And that's mighty sobering, Juanita. It is indeed.
Well, I had my daddy had an aunt, which would be my great aunt, one of a big family, and she married this guy that beat her up. And it was funny you were talking. It was talking on the song about wearing wigs. She had to wear a hat when she go anywhere because he had pulled chunks of her hair out. And 2 of her brothers waylaid him, and they killed him, and they were found not guilty. Of course, if they'd have been women,
well, and that,
put in jail.
Yeah, but you then you clearly understand what I was saying about that he had it coming to him defense.
Oh yeah, because she was just tormented for years, you know, and they see her taking her hat off and she had all them chunks out. No telling what he did to her. I really don't know the whole details, but I do remember that. But anyway. There's some people who are monsters.
Well, they certainly are.
But I just thought when I was listening this week to the Republicans saying that we were making political hay out of things, I just thought about that, about how they'll say, or anybody that's doing any kind of abuse of you, it doesn't have to be your husband. It can be your wife. It can be
a total stranger.
Parent. Whatever, you know, and they will try to fix. It's kind of like the enablers and all in the 12-step program and all.
Yeah.
It's a lot like that, and we've enabled them so long until they think they can just continue to get away with it. But the worm will turn sometime.
And it most assuredly turned in Selmer, Tennessee, a couple of years back.
Yeah, but that was really a great song. I really like their musicianship too.
Well, the name of that is "The Wig He Made Her Wear."
Yeah, that's such an unusual story. They made it implicit, you know. They made it make sense and all. So yeah.
Well, they are an amazing bunch.
But we got to remember not to take the abuses of these people that are in power, and that, you know, they're never satisfied. They're never, ever satisfied. The Republicans are never satisfied. If they
No.
win, they're not satisfied.
And if you catch them right smack dab in the middle of being a great big old honking hypocrite, they just, la, 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 can't hear it.
Yeah.
No, not me. They're immune to it.
Uh-huh. But like you said, the first step, you know, is to recognize that your problem, and that's the problem with a lot of people, and especially seems to me on the right side. And I noticed every time that the Republicans would say something about, you know, now don't do that, you know, trying to tell people. But they say, now remember, you know, when we went to war, how the people who protested the war, how they acted toward Bush and so forth. No, they didn't. They didn't get a chance to. They got put in jail.
Yes, they did. A man with just a sign was put in jail and lost his appeal in South Carolina.
Yeah. And do you think that during the Bush administration that a crowd of people like those teabaggers would have gotten as close to where the law of where the representatives, the Republican representatives could come out and cheer them on, you know, and hang out flags and so forth. And I saw that black worm woman, the blonde.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Marcia.
She was out there with at least a couple of other congressmen. They were holding that flag.
Oh.
And they, you know, and like the one Senator King, you know, oh, you're my kind of people. I'm so thankful to you. I'm so proud of you. Well, they're the ones that egged all that stuff on, and they still got frustrated people that they've lied to, that where are they going to take their frustration to? But they're bringing it all. They're trying to destroy the country, and maybe they don't really realize that they are. But I wonder sometime if they don't realize how they're trying to destroy the country. And the country that they want, I don't know what in the heck anybody would want to live in it.
Nor I, because it's a hateful place, Juanita, this America,
yeah,
that the right wing wants.
You know, I got a name for them, the goose steppers.
Well, it fits.
Yeah, I think it does. And you know, when you want everybody to think alike, and there's no way everybody's going to think alike anyway. You could go to all those people. They've all got different ideas. They don't realize they do. It's just like teaching all this stuff in school that's from the Bible. Whose interpretation are they going to teach? there lies a big problem.
Because there's a bunch of them.
Is denominations and even churches within denominations.
You know what? Maybe, and I don't know that there's any Democrats out there that would want to waste time doing this, but maybe they need to have it put in their face. The right wing does. Maybe a bill needs to be introduced in a constitutional amendment needs to be introduced in Congress, declaring that Seventh-day Adventism shall be the national religion of the United States.
Yeah, boy, would they have a hissy fit.
Right, because and then you know when they say, wait a minute, you're the one that wants government to recognize religion. Well, we think it should be the Seventh-day Adventists. And then let them start tearing each other to pieces over, no, it should be the Baptists, no, it should be the Presbyterians, no, it should be the Catholics.
Yeah, because I'm sure you know that you can go in the Baptist church, they're going to criticize the Methodists.
Oh.
They're sprinklers, you know.
Exactly. Oh, yeah, they're jokes. I heard them growing up.
Yeah. And you know, I've been to different churches, I've studied different churches, and their beliefs and all, and they all have different ideas about the Last Supper, communion, you know, and they've got different ideas about baptism. They got different ideas about the creation. So who are you going to teach? What are you going to teach? And like I said, I believe it's if it doesn't stop, we'll go back to maybe worse than the Dark Ages.
And you know, oh, this is such good stuff that you're bringing up, Juanita, because these right wingers that want we need to return to our Christian values and our Christian roots. You've heard the sermon
over and over and over again.
Sure, you have.
Day in and day out.
Yeah, without ceasing.
Right.
The thing, if you get right down to it, if they want to go back to our Christian values, then what they're saying, again, confront them with their own realities. What they're saying is they want to run all the Jews, all the pagans, all the Muslims, all the everybody who's not a Christian out of the country.
Yeah.
Which is exactly, you know, the same kind of nightmarish conduct of which a horribly unenlightened Europe, especially Eastern Europe and Russia, that we're guilty of and caused untold horrors.
Yeah. I met a man who was, he came from Russia when he was a little boy. I met it several years ago. And he said that they were treated horribly by the Catholic Church. But I always said, you know, back when Kennedy was running, who was the biggest opposers? Was the Baptist.
Oh, sure. Oh, he's going to take all of his orders from the Pope.
Yeah. And I said back then, hey, they would take over if they got a chance, and now they're on their way.
Sure. And what's that to say? The Baptist president would take his orders from Billy Graham?
Well, I'd rather him than his son.
Oh, Franklin. Sleazy. Nasty.
Him and Pat Boone make two pairs. You know?
Oh, don't do that. Don't do that. You'll make me think of that picture again. It hurts.
Still,
it hurts, Juanita.
I still got to send you that article.
Yes, you do.
But anyway, you know, and they don't know the consequences. I think it might be worse than anything the Catholics did back in the so-called good old days in Europe.
Yeah. You know, Because fundamentalists can justify anything that they choose to do.
Yeah, and they believe in torture now.
Sure they do. Yeah, it was good enough for our Lord and Savior. It's good enough for some raghead.
Yeah. Well, anyway, I heard your team won.
Yes, we did. I really enjoyed watching the second half of that game. Well, thank you very kindly.
Now, does it go further from this? Because I don't know that
is. Yeah. We play tomorrow night. We play the University of Kentucky. We're 4-point underdogs. And, you know, all I can do is hope against hope that we can win that one, because that would be awfully sweet.
Well, it does help when your team wins.
Sure it really does. And, you know, we don't have any pro teams in West Virginia. We don't have anybody that... We've got West Virginia University, and there's that little small cadre of people that root for Marshall. But WVU is pretty much it. Mm. And, you know, we've got a long legacy of basketball greatness in this state. You know, Jerry West, Hot Rod Hundley, the man who invented the fast break came from West Virginia. So, you know, this is sort of like the restoral or the restoration of a long and noble history.
Yeah. Okay, well, Bob, you have a great weekend.
Well, I'll certainly try, and you as well, Juanita.
And for tomorrow.
All right, thank you.
Okay.
Talk to you later. Bye now. Our Central Florida correspondent, that's Juanita. You know, I'm surprised she hasn't brought up the business with Elizabeth Hasselbeck on The View. Now look at this. I'm bringing up The View instead of Juanita. She's our View correspondent. Juanita, why have you not been watching? Because this is another one of those credit where credit is due moments. Elizabeth Hasselbeck, that weird little right-wing attack blonde, actually condemned Sarah Palin for her crosshairs picture and her command for people to for right-wingers to reload. Our good buddy Benedict at Large says in regard to a pedophile pope, I could never figure out why the Catholic Church would ever vote a right-wing graduate of the Hitler youth camps as pope. Suddenly it's all become clear. This son of a bitch knew where the bodies were buried. In the service of the Lord, he let them know that he would use that knowledge. And that may very well be the case. It may very well be the case. Just to sort of expand a little bit on what Juanita was talking about, you know, a few days ago that David Frum, he's a former Bush speechwriter. He's the guy who coined the phrase axis of evil, you know, really thinks highly of himself. He was dumped from the American Enterprise Institute, which is a hard right-wing proto-fascist so-called think tank. Why was he dumped? Why was he forced out? Well, because he said that the Republican tactics regarding the health care bill had resulted in a net loss for the Republican Party. He said, it's a Waterloo, all right. Ours. And he actually put that out there to his fellow conservatives. Well, guess what? That was ideologically intolerable to the Repiglicans. The donors started ringing the phone at the American Enterprise Institute. I give you a lot of money, and I didn't give you this money to have that David Frum out there saying this here's our Waterloo. I'm going to quit giving you money. So the president of the American Enterprise Institute, Arthur Brooks, took David Frum out to lunch and said, well, I value a diversity of opinion, but, you know, we'd like to downgrade you to a non-salaried position. In other words, he fired David Frum for having a disagreement with the drop-dead, wrong, failed strategy of the Repiglican Party. This is not the first time it's happened. It happened to Bruce Bartlett, who had been an economic advisor to George W. Bush. And after he left the White House, he wrote a book called Imposter, How George W. Bush Bankrupted America and Betrayed the Reagan Legacy. For writing that book, he was canned in 2005 as a senior fellow at a conservative Texas-based think tank. You know, you have to freight all of these words with irony sounds when you're reading them out loud. That was called the National Center for Policy Analysis. So Bartlett was on C-SPAN this morning. This deserves to be heard. Because he was describing what's actually going on inside the Repiglican Party.
Mr. Bartlett, why do you title this the closing of the conservative mind when it comes to David Frum leaving AEI?
Well, because what has happened over the last few years, and the same thing happened to me, a conservative group called the National Center for Policy Analysis fired me 5 years ago because I wrote a book that was critical of George W. Bush. And even though it was critical from a conservative point of view, it was clearly, you know, not helpful to, you know, the Republican Party. And that's what's really going on here, is that adherence to conservative principles has been is out the window now. All that matters now is absolute subservient adherence to the Republican Party line of the day. And that's what got David into trouble, is he was critical not even of Republican principles, but of Republican tactics on the health care debate. And now even that is considered, you can't say that. And you lose your job.
In other words, for all of their braying and bleating about that one being a socialist or a communist or a Nazi fascist socialo-communy, they're the ones who are. Because there is apparently an ideological, no, there's not apparently, there is an ideological purity test inside the Republican Party, and if you don't pass it every day, you get purged. This was, you know, this was a Stalinist purge tactic on the part of the money crowd that are also the weird ass wingnut, you know, the white wingers of the Republican Party. It's stunning. No, wrong word, Bob. Wrong word. It is not stunning. It's typical. It's to be expected. But it is, in a way, sad. It's sort of sad on a archetypal level. It certainly doesn't break my butt to see the Republican Party falling apart. They're falling apart because they're evil. And you know that based on the fact that after all of this, the Wall Street Journal came out and criticized David Frum and said, Mr. Frum, now remember, this is the Wall Street Journal, otherwise known as the Rupert Murdoch business rag. Mr. Frum now makes his living as the media's go-to basher of fellow Republicans, which is a stock beltway role. But he's peddling bad revisionist history that would have been even worse politics. Really? Who's engaging in the revisionist history? Because the revisionist history would seem to be pretending that what's in the health care bill is somehow different from the very same items that were proposed 17 years ago by Republicans and is easily verifiable. That seems rather revisionist in my book. But not to worry. Not to worry. Because certainly nothing that David Frum said is going to make the Republican Party change its tone or its tune. And in fact, we have proof. The folks over at thinkprogress.org pulled together a video audio montage of the leaders of the right wing fanning the flames of hate and violence. And in the same light as some of what Juanita was talking about blame the victim, you know, she had it coming, you know, she nagged him, therefore he, all this ex post facto justification for just vile, disgusting acts of violence. Well, the same thing apparently plays out with the former House Speaker and serial philanderer Newt Gingrich. He showed up yesterday at a press conference with Georgia Governor Sonny Perdue. Remember Sonny? Sonny's the guy who consulted the meteorologist back during the big summer drought in Georgia. What was it, last summer, summer before last?
consulted the meteorologist before he went out to publicly pray for rain. He wanted to make sure there was some rain in the forecast before he implored and God Almighty to make it rain on Georgia. Yeah, that's Sonny Perdue. So they showed up at a press conference to whine and piss and moan some more about the health care bill, otherwise known now as the health care law. Ha, 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 suck it, Republicans. Sorry, that was very, very tacky of me. Well, at this press conference, Newt Gingrich was asked about the violence that has been done to Democrats over this new law. I love saying new law, new health care law. It's kind of fun. It's got a ring to it. We should make more of them. You won't be surprised, but still, it is valuable to hear the sick and twisted and ugly mindset of the serial abuser as it is brought to bear on this particular issue.
I oppose anybody using vile language, making threats. The governor's exactly right. The right way in America, if you disagree, is to win an election. And the fact is, the American people in the last election picked Pelosi, Reid, Obama, and now they have the consequence of that. The American people this fall had a new opportunity to make new decisions, and anybody who's angry ought to focus their anger into the political process to run an intense campaign that's totally legitimate, to raise questions that's totally legitimate. But there's no place in America, just as there was no place for the kind of viciousness against Bush and Cheney.
Okay, see the false equivalence, just like there the viciousness against Bush and Cheney. How many bricks were put through how many Repiglic and county headquarters because of anything that that sick and twisted pair of psychopaths did in the 8 tormented years that they had no business being in the White House? How many? Quick answer, none. How many posters were carried around saying, if Brown can't do it, a Browning can? None. How many websites were there calling for people to arm themselves to the teeth and prepare to shoot it out with the federales? None. On the left, none. And at the same time that Newt Gingrich says that there's no place for it, he says they need to, while there's no place for that kind of behavior, he also says they need to put that behavior into the political process. See, this is the conundrum. This is the quandary of the right wing. They've built this monster. They have grabbed this tiger by the tail. And now all they can do is hope to get on and hang on to the ears and ride for dear life. But my God, if the tiger turns on you, you are meat. Because that's what tigers do. So at the same time that he hypocritically says there's no room for this stuff, he says, but there's room for them inside the political process. No, no. You disavow them. You say you want nothing to do with them. You tell them to stop doing it, and or you will have nothing to do with them. It's really not that difficult.
There's no place for viciousness against Democrats. A lot of the country where we can disagree without having to get in that kind of personal threat, and I would condemn any kind of activity that involves that kind of personal threat.
Here it comes.
Look, I think there's something very disingenuous about the Democratic leaders who attack the Tea Party movement, who refused to hold town hall meetings, who refused to go back home, who kept the Congress locked up in Washington, and are now shocked that people are angry.
Excuse me? Who refused to hold town hall meetings? Didn't we have clip after clip after clip after clip of Democrats being subjected to all manner of hate, all manner of ridicule, all manner of insane, utterly irrational screeching, squealing, bleeding, blatting, and oinking from the teabaggers? Didn't we have that, or was that just that other universe? Because I'm pretty sure we did. I think there's something very disingenuous, Gangrene says, about the Democratic leaders who attacked the Tea Party movement. Attacked them? With what? Tambourines? Love beads? Daisies? What? The teabaggers weren't attacked. You know, it was pointed out that they were a bunch of damned astroturfers who were being manipulated by the K Street PR firms for Republican gain. That is not an attack. That is an observation of fact. But we're not done. Or I should say, Newt's not done.
I think the Democratic leadership has to take some real responsibility for having behaved with such arrogance and in such a hostile way that the American people are deeply upset.
Really? It was what the Democrats did that made the American people upset? Really, Newt? Gosh, I would think that maybe it was the behavior of Republican politicians that got their mouth-breathing followers so wrought. I think the Democratic leadership has to take some moral responsibility for having behaved with such arrogance in such a hostile way that the American people are deeply upset. That is the moral equivalent of that old line about, you know what the problem is with most abused women? They just don't know when to shut up. It's same, same. It's the same mindset. You know, if those Democrats would just go back to being the damn doormats that we've enjoyed having them be for so many years, we wouldn't have to whip our knuckle-walking, mouth-breathing faithful into paroxysms of frenzied rage. Huh? They don't have the guts, and they don't have the integrity to deplore and denounce and condemn this violence and these threats and these overt hostile acts, because when you get to the bottom of it all, they actually like it. They want it. They yearn for it. They ache for it. They can't wait to get up some morning and find out that some right-wing freak has put a bullet through some Democrat's head so that they can then go out and say, well, this violence was uncalled for and we condemn it, but the Democrats have to take some degree of responsibility for their arrogance. Jesus criminy.
And so I think, well, let's be honest about this. This is a game that they play. People should not engage in personal...
This is a game they're playing? He means the Democrats. We're playing a game? The other side is armed to the teeth and we're playing a game?
Yes. I'm happy to condemn any effort to engage in personal threats.
But
I think that the Democratic leadership has to take some real responsibility for having run a machine... They use corrupt tactics that bought votes, that bully people, and as a result has enraged much of the American people. And I think it'd be...
Except for the fact that none of that happened. It didn't happen. The Republicans merely lied, as Republicans are wont to do, and said that it happened. There's a big difference. Hold on. Wait a minute. We're finally going to find out whose fault all of this really is.
Nice for President Obama, Speaker Pelosi, and Majority Leader Reid take some responsibility for what their actions have done to this country.
Ah, see? It's President Obama, Speaker Pelosi, and Majority Leader Reid's fault. Poor little Harry Reid. Poor little Harry Reid that would never hurt so much as a fly. It's his fault. Yeah, it's his fault. It's not these guys' fault.
Any suggestion that a leader in this body would incite threats or acts against other members is akin to saying that I would endanger myself, my wife, or my children.
This is Representative Eric Cantor, the minority whip, the Britney Spears fan, the guy who claimed that his office had been shot at, only it turned out that it wasn't really. It was a stray bullet falling straight down that went through his window glass but couldn't penetrate the blinds and was found lying on the floor by the window. Really.
And fought against tyranny and oppressive taxes. Does that sound familiar?
This is Representative Michael McCaul.
We're continuing that revolution right here in Austin, Texas today. Thomas Jefferson once said that the tree of liberty will be fed with the blood of tyrants and patriots.
Oh, this is going to get fun.
You are the modern day patriots.
Oh, so I guess that makes me the tyrant. Us, the tyrants. And what needs to happen to tyrants? Well, the tree of liberty must be fed with our blood.
What is it, the home?
This is Representative Joe Barton, a Republican from Texas.
Homeland Security people are calling us now. Domestic terrorists!
Yeah.
Welcome, right-wing activists. Is that what we are? Extremists. Yeah, extreme. Well, I'm going to give me a button.
This is Representative Todd Akin, Republican from Missouri.
Decided to cast their votes on the Lord's Day. He is taking notes and paying attention.
Amen.
We put our cares on him as our forefathers did. We will wait and see his deliverance. But you and I, we will solemnly resolve here to do everything in our power to restore freedom and to send that part of socialist down to where they belong in the river down there.
Okay, we're going to send those socialists down to where they belong in the river down there. Really? They're saying this. This isn't dummied up. This isn't faked. This is quite real. This is the eliminationism of the leadership. You know, this isn't some pot-bellied old lard-ass sitting in Pinson, Alabama, calling for people to put bricks through windows. These are the people who are radicalizing the lard-asses of Pinson, Alabama, to call for people to put bricks through windows. These are the accessories before the fact. These are the authors of the criminal conspiracy.
Freedom once more restored and Washington, D.C. taken apart so that it no longer is a threat on American freedom and liberty.
Now, you're going to love this. This is Representative Wally Herger, a Republican from California.
And I want to say that I'm a proud right-wing terrorist.
That is a member of the Congress of the United States, whom you just heard say, let me make sure this is loud enough for us all to hear it.
And I want to say that I'm a proud right-wing terrorist.
Now listen to the wing nuts cheer. Now listen to the response to him.
Amen. God bless you. There's a great America.
This, of course, is the Queen of Nuts, Michelle Bachmann of Minnesota.
Thomas Jefferson said, a revolution every now and then is a good thing. We are at the point, Sean, of revolution.
Really, now in Washington, I'm a foreign correspondent on enemy lines. I want people in Minnesota armed and dangerous.
If I can start a country with a bunch of...
Now, and this is the final, this is the last one. This is Steve King, less than a week ago, talking to a bunch of baggers, birthers, deathers, tenthers, and assorted booger eaters who are all heavily armed.
If I could start a country with a bunch of people, they'd be the folks that have been here standing with us the last 2 days.
You hear the one voice? You will. You will.
Let's hope we don't have to do that. beat that other side to a pulp. Let's take them out. Let's chase them down. There's going to be a reckoning.
Let's beat that other side to a pulp. Let's take them out. Let's chase them down. There's going to be a reckoning. But, as Newt Gingrich reminded us, this is all the fault of the Democrats. They haven't done anything to fan the flames. Oh, hell no. Of course not. They'd never do anything like that. Except for the fact that they did things exactly like that. You know, I mentioned that the lard-ass from Pinson, Alabama, Mike Vanderboog, is touting this Second Amendment march. The mission of the Second Amendment march is to galvanize the courage and resolve of the Americans to petition our elected officials against establishing anti-gun legislation and to remind America that the Second Amendment is necessary to maintain our right to self-defense. It is the one right that protects all others. We will accomplish our mission by a peaceful march in Washington, D.C., the United States capital, supported by satellite marches in cities all across America. As I was reminded, the date that they have chosen for this march is April the 19th, 2010. April the 19th is the day before Hitler's birthday. April the 19th is the day before the anniversary of the Columbine Massacre. And more importantly, April 19th is the anniversary of Waco and the Oklahoma City bombing. They're proud of it. They want it. They ache for it. They yearn for death. They long for bloodshed, and not their own, but rather yours. Any questions? Ron in Raleigh says, hey, Bob, once again, you're taking the pig lickings out of context. In fact, they are always taken out of context. It is never their fault. No, it's never their fault. It's not their fault in Nashville, Tennessee, where a Nashville man, this story breaking today, where a Nashville man says he and his 10-year-old daughter were victims of road rage yesterday afternoon. Because they had the temerity to still have an Obama-Biden bumper sticker on her car. Mark Duran said the incident happened around 4:30 p.m. Central Daylight Time while he was driving on Blair Boulevard in Nashville, not far from Belmont University. For those of you not conversant with Nashville, Belmont University is a Baptist school. A man named Harry Weisiger, W-E-I-S-I-G-E-R, flipped off Mr. Duran and rammed into his vehicle. Mr. Duran had just picked up his 10-year-old daughter from school, had her in the car with him. Duran said, he pointed at the back of my car, the bumper, flipped me off, one finger salute. Then Weisiger honked his horn at him for a while as Duran stopped at a stop sign. You know, one of those socialist stop signs. Then when Mr. Duren began driving again down Blair Boulevard towards his home, he said, I looked in the rearview mirror again, and this same SUV was speeding, flying up behind me, bumped me. Duren said he applied his brake and the SUV smashed into the back of his car. He then put his car in park to take care of the accident, but Weisiger started pushing the car using his SUV. Duren said he pushed my car up towards the sidewalk, almost onto the sidewalk. Police say Harry Weisiger is charged with felony reckless endangerment in the incident. Again, for those of you not familiar with the Nashville market, let's just put it this way. There ain't a hell of a lot of liberal radio on the radio down there. But inside your automobile, you can get all you want of Hannity and Savage and Beck and Limbaugh and all the other filthy, filthy inciters of this kind of violence, praising the teabaggers, blaming the Democrats. You can get this up to your throat level. As with most any other major city, Nashville has a lot of radio stations, most of which are owned by a handful of corporations, most of which corporations want to make damn good and certain that the right-wing message is poured out like vomit all over the greater Nashville area. I don't know who Mark Duren is. I don't know what his physicality is. I don't know what his attitude is. But I applaud Mark Duren for not getting out of his car after having his 10-year-old daughter assaulted by a sickening, disgusting white winger and beating the white winger to goddamn death with a tire iron. I applaud him for not doing that, because we do not do violence. Can you imagine an Obama supporter? Can you imagine a liberal? Can you imagine a Democrat doing what Harry Weisiger did? No, you can't. I can't either, because it's not how we are. Now, I admit, I've driven by a few people from time to time during the last 8 tormented, tortured years. You know, you see the 1972 Caprice with one lug nut on each wheel wobbling down the highway, and they've got a Bush Cheney sticker in the back, and you drive by them and you're just shaking your head. You're not trying to get their attention, but you just can't help it. You're shaking your head thinking, my God, what kind of idiot are you? But flip them off, ram them with your car, try to do harm to a 10-year-old child. Mm-mm. Felony reckless endangerment. No, baby. No, Nashville Police Department. That was attempted murder. And just as is the case with the Roman Catholic Church and its little rape problem, until we call these things what they are going to continue to happen. This guy engaged in an act of attempted murder. This isn't reckless endangerment. This is an intentional act. Intended to do bodily harm in the extreme degree to a man and his 10-year-old daughter. Because they had a bumper sticker. And no, you don't get to just write this off as, well, you know, it's the South. This isn't a Southern thing. This is a right-wing thing. A white-wing thing. And it's not because Mr. Weisiger is crazy. It's because he is a radicalized white winger. You know, one person wrote in and posted a comment at this website. I'm completely unsurprised with this. As a driver with an Obama sticker on the back of my own car for more than a year, I've dealt with numerous other people on the road honking, flipping off at me, my sticker, angry, head shaking, screaming, flailing arms. These Tea Party folks are absolutely crazy. No, they are not. No. Ma'am, they are not. They are quite sane. And what they're doing is sane and legally responsible as a matter of law. They are doing what they have been told to do. What did we hear? What did we hear Todd Akin from Missouri say? Take them down and throw them in the river where they belong. What did we hear Steve King say? Beat them to a pulp. Chase them down. There's going to be a reckoning. This woman who writes says, this insignificant little man is very fortunate that it was not me he decided to crash into with my kids in the car. I would have handled it much differently. Something like, lock the door, kids. Get down on the ground and don't look. Mama gonna clean up the trash. Amen, sister. Amen. Wow. And one other thing to mention before we go back to the phones, and I don't want to run out of programming before I can do this tonight. We've got some good news in the hills today. News out of Washington. The EPA has issued a proposal to block the single largest mountaintop removal nightmare in central Appalachia's history. They've said the project would pollute drinking water and harm wildlife in mountain streams, and the damages to the mountains would be irreversible. It has taken a long time to get to this point. At the end of every program, when I tell you that the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch are the hardest working, bravest people I know, it's because I have seen them work tirelessly day in and day out along with other allied groups to bring about a moment like today when the EPA said no. We are now they didn't say no, they said we're proposing to say no to this Spruce Mine number one nightmare toxic waste complex. Now there will be public hearings. Now there will be a public comment period. And if you go over and read about this at Coal Tattoo, which is at wvgazette.com, click blogs, click Coal Tattoo, find Ken Ward's post on it. He has a link there where you can post public comments and how to do it to the EPA in support of their proposal to reject this permit. As you all know, I don't often say do this, do that, but this is effortless. Go to wvgazette.com and then look for the blog called Coal Tattoo. And then find the post titled Breaking News: EPA Issues Proposed Determination to Block Clean Water Act Permit for the Largest Mountaintop Removal Mine in West Virginia History. You will scroll down to a comment from Ken Ward. He said, here's how to comment to EPA. Submit your comments identified by docket number, yada, 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 by one of the following methods. You can email, or you can go through the federal e-rulemaking portal. This is not hard to do. Please do this. We need thousands upon thousands upon thousands of people saying The science simply does not support mountaintop removal. We know now because of peer-reviewed science, not faith, not hopes, but science. We know that there is no way to safely or responsibly do what they want to do at Spruce Number 1. We support the veto of the Clean Water Act permit for this complex. Please, could you do it, please? This is happening because of the tireless, hard, scary work of people in the coal fields, who, with little or nothing for themselves, are standing up against a multi-billion-dollar industry. Not just for themselves, but for you as well. Get their backs. Have their backs. Let the EPA know that you do not want Spruce Number 1 to happen. Because it's your water, too. And the Appalachians are your mountains, too. Because you wouldn't do this to your own country. And EPA needs to hear clearly a ringing call from all across America that this must not be allowed to go forward, that this mine must be killed. It must be stopped. It must not be allowed. There will be public hearings on this, and the hardest working, bravest people I know will be there, and they will face shouting and screaming and threats and violence from the thugs in the coal industry. But they will be there just the same. But in being there, they need you to have their backs. WVGazette.com, click on blogs, click on Coal Tattoo, go to the one, breaking news, EPA issues proposed determination to block Clean Water Act permit for the biggest mountaintop removal mine in West Virginia history. Scroll down to the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9th comment, Ken Ward Jr. says, March 26, 2010 at 1:50 p.m., and then go and make the comment to stop this, to let EPA know you support their decision to veto this mine. It's not a mine. It's a nightmare. It is a horror in the hills. It is another payment in the installment plan of the Appalachian apocalypse. And for God's sakes, please let EPA know that you know it must end. If you want to, you can pop into the chat room and head on radionetwork.com/chatroom. Pop into the chat room. Our moderators have the link to the blog if you want to go there and get the direct link so you can just get right after it. It is good news. It is joyous news. It is proof, as Sue noted, she said, it's a foot in the door, Bob. Just like health care. Still lots of work to do, but this is proof that if we stick with it, we will win. Oh, by the way, I said earlier that, credit where credit's due, that Elizabeth Hasselbeck had actually denounced Sarah Palin. And Sue tells me that she has put the video on the Horn website, headonradionetwork.com, with the title, Elizabeth Hasselbeck Caught on Tape Acting Like a Human Being. If you want to go check that out. Yeah, the comments... you don't need to comment on the blog post. Let's get this... What you need to do is go to the comments themselves and look for the links that Ken provides. That's the whole point. Let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program. Hello?
Hello?
Hey!
Oh, it's me.
Hey, Reverbo. Catching a little nap in between time, are we?
Yeah, your show has that effect on me a lot.
You'd be surprised. Yeah. I can put an insomniac down.
I've been listening all evening because, you know, I don't have a life. And I got a question for you. And I could possibly develop this question. I'll try to do it in a very short amount of time. But the essential question is, okay, what do they want it to look like? That, in other words, that doesn't already exist in the United States of America. What does the white wing, and I still have trouble doing that without feeling that I'm doing a Chinese impression. It's hard to say that. What the hell do they want? Because I'll tell you something. I don't know where they've been, but in the 5 decades that I've been alive, I've noticed that it's very business and capitalism friendly around here. It's very religiously tolerant around here, and I don't understand where they're coming from.
I don't, Reverbo, to be quite honest, I don't know if they know what they want. They know they hate the fact that there is a man with darker skin than them in the office of the president. They know it, and they hate it, and it drives them absolutely irrational. It makes them nuts.
It's going to happen sooner or later, though.
But, you know, they know that they want that to go away. They just want to wake up and be back in the orderly universe in which they live, where white people run America.
It was so easy to be white. There never was a time like that, though. That's Leave It to Beaverland stuff. Well, never mind. I asked a question. The question still stands.
I know.
I'll give you three things that, I mean, it's almost like it this involves, I can't even imagine anyone from, like, World War II to 1980. Any working person ever letting this image of America get distorted or get twisted and thrown back in their face. Hell, we can go back to the Depression and FDR. I can't imagine anybody letting it get hijacked like this or buying into this twisted bullshit. But I'll give you three things that have happened.
Okay.
Well, the media has sold out. That's a relatively new one. Education has been, well, clearly discouraged and priced out of most people's range. That's a fairly new one. And the people that lived through the Great Depression, well, they're dying. Nobody even remembers that anymore. But it still seems to me, it strikes me as a sci-fi Kurt Vonnegut scale psych job. I can't believe anyone buys into this who works for a living and has contributed to the United States. Anybody would think that in the face of a gigantic crisis, that a compassionate response by government is an evil thing.
But you say, and I think I'm trying processing here, Reverbo. One of the things that the Republican Party has been essentially effective at is the fact that they have managed to disconnect people from the notion that they are the government. The Republican Party has convinced people, starting, you know, way back with Ronald Reagan and that whole, you know, the 9 most frightening words in the English language are, I'm from the government and I'm here to help. Starting all the way back with all that BS, they have managed to get the right wing to feel like people who are ruled instead of sovereigns. And as a result of that, any idea of an act of compassion by government is viewed as some sort of sick overreaching by government because these wingnuts feel like they are no longer a part of government because they're not getting to have their way, even if they knew what their way was.
I guess that's the part that's confusing me. What is it that doesn't already... Jesus, God, this country bends over backwards for morons. This country goes out of its way for corporations. And
this country is providing $1,300 a month to a lard ass for him to sit on his lard ass and write blog posts telling people to put bricks through windows of people they don't even know.
Well, I know it's the greatest country in the world. What's there not to like about this? That's what I mean. I don't know how they twist this.
Yeah, and see, Reverbo, I don't begrudge the lard ass his $1,300. I want to live in a country where we will not let a right-wing lard ass starve to death because the right-wing lard ass is still a human being. I'm yelling at you. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to.
No. I it drives me crazy, and I guess trying to analyze it as if we were dealing with rational people.
Which we ain't.
Is the problem. I keep coming at it from that angle. Like, for every, what did we decide? What, were there 500,000 people who were worth $5 million in 2009, the latest?
Yeah, something like that, yeah.
I guarantee, yeah, well, it's easy to work these numbers. For every person, we could use, like, you know, I don't know, Social Security or Medicare, any of these programs. But for anybody who, you know, doesn't need, you know, it's great that it's there, but, you know, we don't need it. We're doing okay, and you know, we can afford to go ahead and fly to Switzerland to, you know, get that lump looked at. We got tons of money, but for everybody like that, there's thousands of people who have parents that depend on Social Security, that depend on Medicare. How do you get those people worked? You get them worked up into hating their parents?
Yeah. Well, no. We're also entering into those marshy verges of a swamp known as cognitive dissonance. Because these people who hate Social Security don't hate their parents. And they don't hate the fact that their parents aren't, you know, living off of them. They like it. But they like it because it's their parents. If it's somebody else's parents, they're freeloaders. And that, again, is the sort of irony here, white noise that the white wing has been subjected to for so long that they can't tell that there's noise anymore. It's like having tinnitus. After a while, you quit hearing the ringing. Right?
I guess I'm just not good enough to come at it, to suspend my reason so that I can get my hands around this. Because you could no longer take Social Security away from my mother than you could fly to the moon without a spaceship. I mean, and at one time, I had fallen for this. I mean, up until 2 years ago, I was employed. As a matter of fact, I worked for 30 years. I actually sort of was hoping I have made my contribution and I could make room for someone else, but never mind about any of that. Things didn't happen the way I was hoping, and the second Great Depression rolled around and I lost my job and da-da-da-da-da. But
wait, Reverbo. Wait a minute, please.
I don't want to talk about me.
No, I'm not going to make you talk about you. But I am going to say that you have just done something that the Democrats are very good at doing.
Uh-oh.
And that is at shrinking away from our own telling our own personal horror stories. You said, and I lost my job and da 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 da. Well, you know what? I don't know what your personal circumstance is, but I got a pretty good idea of what da 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 means. It means sweating the rent. It means sweating the power. It means sweating the water bill. It means sweating tomorrow's dinner. It means sweating everything.
Well, you can't. I mean, no one can predict how these things turn out, and a whole bunch of baby boomers just happen to get dumped on here at a bad time in their career. time frame. You know, just about the time they were thinking, we're just about done. All these secret plans explode that Bear Stearns and Goldman Sachs were working on, not to mention the entire, you know, neocon. Well, I don't want to get into this. My point was that my mom, I remember what my point was, and it was about me. Because back in about 1990 or 92, I'm not proud of this, but I will admit it, I kind of bought into the whole Contract for America thing for a very short time, until I realized what a bunch of bullshit it was. Because I had a job, and I was making money, and I was kind of pissed. I'll admit it, that they were taking Social Security out of my check, and I had my, on top of another retirement fund that they were taking out. And I was thinking, maybe there is something to this. That's too bad. You know, I start replacing the we with the me. It's so easy to do.
Yeah, and, you know, I could use that. I could use that $125 a week or a month or whatever it turned out to be.
I'm taking care of myself. I mean, this is a gyp. This is a ripoff. I mean, I can, and you know.
I've pulled myself up by my own bootstraps.
Well, the bootstrap store was open for me for a long time, and the boots were cheap, and the straps were cheap. I don't know what we're talking about.
Yeah, straps.
But anyway, I soon realized that they were just pulling a fast one on us. That they didn't know. They no more bought into this fantasy. You know, they were just trying to make us feel good about, well, they were just changing the we's into me's. As simple as that. They were tossing out enemies for us, like, you know, welfare queens and all the rest of it, making it seem like we were supporting riffraff. I didn't stay with the Republicans for very long, but you can understand this, maybe, just for a long time.
Absolutely, I can understand it, Reverbo, because you know what? The Republicans are very good at playing to the most manipulable human emotions there are, fear and hate. The reason Jesus got hung up on the tree was because he was trying to appeal to the, you know, what Abraham Lincoln would later call the better angels of our nature. It is hard to appeal to most human, at least in this society, it's hard to appeal to most people's sense of love. It is much easier to get them to hate somebody because you can tie it to something that the other are doing to you. Fear? Fear's easy because you don't even, going all the way back to childhood, and you know, this stuff's Jungian and Freudian and stuff, children fear what's under the bed when all that's under the bed are dust bunnies. Because humans are hardwired to fear what they cannot see and what they do not know. And people who know that and have a need to control other humans manipulate it. Fear drove us through the Cold War. Fear drives the right wing over, it's driving the right wing over a cliff right now. But it's easy to work with.
Even mainstream media was running stories about what the causes of this second depression were.
Yes.
So there was no secret about this. Everyone heard the terms credit default swaps, and everybody heard about the derivative market, and everybody heard about the subprime mortgages, and everybody heard about the ownership society and getting people, you know, and how you'd get a bonus for writing a mortgage to somebody that didn't have any business owning a trailer, let alone owning a house.
Everybody right, and then, and, but then, but then the right-wing media took all of that and focused solely on people who were given predatory mortgages. See, it turned into Bill Clinton's fault because of the Fair Housing Act. Because, you know, it wasn't, you know, we didn't, you know, don't know anybody that doesn't deserve a mortgage, but I'm sure there are some, I mean, they're out there, obviously, because now they've had the homes they didn't deserve taken away from them, by God, and that's America.
Wow. Well, there's always a way to get you into a nice, a more expensive suit than you can afford, just with these easy payment plans.
Just $9.95 a month. And you know what? I feel an urge right now, Reverbo, to play the anthem for all of this, and I know you'll appreciate it.
Go for it.
Phase 5 sent this along. This is going. Oh, Reverbo, this is so going to speak to you.
I don't know what they have to say. It makes no difference anyway. Whatever it is, I'm against it. No matter what it is or who commenced it, I'm against it. Your proposition may be good, but let's have one thing understood. Whatever it is, I'm against it. And even when you've changed it or condensed it, I'm against it.
I mean, is that the healthcare debate in a nutshell?
There's my man. Yeah.
Orrin Hatch and Charles Grassley proposed the very same legislation that middle-of-the-road Barack Obama came along and got passed, but they were against it after they were for it.
We are living in the world's longest Marx Brothers movie.
I'm just waiting for the funny part.
Or the part where someone, the brick that gets thrown through the window, it isn't made out of rubber. The funny part where it hits somebody in the head and kills them. That funny part?
Yeah, you know.
I love Nazis calling me a Nazi. There's nothing better than that.
Pretty rich, really.
All you have to do is spend. Just go to school. The Constitution is actually words on a piece of paper. You can read it.
And they're not complicated words.
You have to make these mistakes. It doesn't say stuff in there like they're telling us it says. You can check on this yourself.
Several online sources, as a matter of fact. And it's not written in, and those online sources aren't even written in that old 18th century script where it says Congress.
It just blows my mind how.
And, you know, there are object lessons there, Reverbo, because the several states did not write elegant little constitutions like what the framers wrote the federal one. The biggest embarrassment in the United States is the Alabama Constitution of 1902 or 1910 or whatever it was. Damn thing's 1,500 pages long now. Because every time the state of Alabama wants to do anything, they have to amend the Constitution. Because the Constitution was written so brutally and so specifically, rather than the lovely little generalities that exist in the federal one, because the governmental modus operandi was to make sure that concentrated wealth and concentrated power remained concentrated where it was concentrated. You should see the Alabama Constitution. It makes you've heard things that are complicated described as Byzantine, right?
Oh yeah.
That word should be thrown out of the lexicon. It should be replaced by Alabamian. Because government in Alabama is virtually non-existent, and you know there are people there who like it that way. Because it was designed that way by people who wrote a very inelegant framing document. I can't remember offhand how many amendments there are to the Alabama Constitution, but my God, it's in the hundreds. And it's for things like, we need to amend the Alabama Constitution so we can fix that pothole over in front of Mrs. Miller's place next to the stop sign.
Oh God, they blew it bad.
We have to amend the Constitution to buy a new school bus to take lard-ass and Pinson's kids to school.
God, how do they get anything done down there?
They don't, and they like it. Because, you know, if you can't get anything done, then the people of the state know better than to ask you to do anything. You put a great big wall, you know, the right wing doesn't like the wall of separation between church and state, but they do love the wall of separation between people and government. Because if you were supposed to be involved in government, you would have been born white. for the most part.
Yeah, don't I know it? Well, you're at the top of the you're at the top of the hour.
I done run slap out of time. See what you do.
Don't forget, though. It's important, though, that we remember that the majority of people voted for change in 2008. These people we're talking about, they are loudmouths and they are annoying, but they are in the minority.
They very much are.
They are. We can't exaggerate their importance. We have to watch our back, but we cannot give them more power. I certainly don't want to allocate them any more influence than they think they already have.
I don't either. I want them arrested, arraigned, and imprisoned for doing what they've done. Out of all these brick-throwing incidents, have you found a single story of anyone being arrested?
No, that's a little troublesome, too.
The guy who spat on one of the congressmen was arrested, but the congressman declined to press charges.
Well, you know, us Democrats are pretty sweet people.
Yeah.
All right. Well, enjoy your weekend.
Well, you know, and before you go, make it personal. And you might be interested to know that I think it was our buddy Patrick in Massachusetts who sent this along to me via Facebook. Lo and behold, there was one of those little blast emails that went out from Al Gore's Repower America project. And Patrick sent it to me with the subject line, "Is somebody listening to the horn?" Because lo and behold, the subject line of Al Gore's blast email was, "Make it personal."
Oh, how about that?
We never know who's listening, Reverbo. We just never know.
And I think you've had some new callers lately, too.
Oh, yes, we are. There's growth going on here. There's expansion going on here.
And it's all
happening by the miracle of word of mouth. No $10,000 PR contracts, none of that. It's just a matter of people realizing that there's an opportunity to hear and be heard here.
It's the new marketing, though. It's word of mouth has replaced, as they say, the abundance has replaced scarcity. The old style is dead, and the internet has opened everything up.
The king is dead. Long live the king.
There you go. All
right, Reverbo, make it personal, and have a great weekend.
You too.
Bye now. I'm going to do something I don't ordinarily do, and I'm going to try to fit in one more phone call. Hey, welcome to the program.
You did.
What?
It's Richard.
Hey, Richard, what's up?
Got
a lot of time, but I got a few, so.
Okay, great. I'll make my stack short. First of all, I still want to work with Reverbo because I'm getting too much reverberation on his sound. So can you put us in touch?
I can try, but I don't know that there's much you can work with. It's this.
I think there is.
This is telephony, you know. And...
Oh yeah, no. But I have some ideas I want to run by him.
Okay.
Anyway, please put us in touch. I'll send you an email.
Okay, do please.
Reverbo, I love you. I want to be able to understand you. So let's see. Where's my stack? What was the event that you played just now?
Oh, you mean the song?
No, not the song. The thing with Newt Gingrich.
That was just audio of him being questioned at a press conference that he held with Sonny Perdue yesterday on the steps of the Georgia Capitol.
Oh, okay.
The audio was terrible.
Yeah, no, I'm not talking about the audio. I just wanted to know what it was. Speaking of Newt Gingrich, I have a psychology on the mind about these people, and a friend of mine in the UK sent me a link to a site that's about a new film coming out of Australia called I, Psychopath, and it's a documentary about sociopaths.
Oh, wow.
And I think this bears a good looking at. You know, we talk about on our program, Malloy, too, about individual atrocities that come from the right, and they come constantly, you know, every single day without let up. there's some kind of outrage that's going on with these people. But my what I want to suggest is that we don't get mesmerized with the, you know, with what they do. It's what they do. And instead, or not instead, but in addition, let's pull back a little bit and start thinking about who we're dealing with, what their behavior patterns are. You know, look at the psychology and ask ourselves, what do we want to do to save our country? So I think the first step of that is to realize what the patterns are beyond what we already do and the psychology of it. You know, we're dealing with sociopaths. We're dealing with bullies. We're dealing with bully enablers.
Yes.
That's the enemy.
And you know, the question is, you know, there's that old saying that Sue reminded me of, you can't fix stupid.
No, you can't, but you can combat it.
Yes.
And I think, you know, Gingrich is a naked narcissist. You know, open shut.
Oh, in more ways than one when you consider his marriage record.
Yeah, exactly. But it's like that's what he lives for, you know, adoration. And, you know, we're dealing with bullies. We're dealing with people who worship bullies or enable them. And we're dealing with an issue of Goliath versus David. You know, when I saw the one thing, for instance, that seems to be consistent in the behavior of our Supreme Court justices, the Catholics, is that they always place Goliath over David. Think about it.
Oh, absolutely.
And we live with this. This is normal. And certainly not only on the Supreme Court, but a lot elsewhere. We are always being beaten down when it comes to winning and losing. Well, you just said something about a win, about a coal mine.
Yeah.
That's when I came in. I'm usually not around for the first 2 hours. And I was thinking, wow, you know, I'm just imagining the amount of work that, you know, sheer effort went into getting that far. Am I right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Profound. Backbreaking, yeah. Heartbreaking. You know, there are people who have been involved in the struggle who are dead now.
Yes.
You know, who died working for this.
Yep. 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 So, I guess, you know, the thing is on my mind, you know, I mentioned this before, I'm older than you, and my whole life has been this way, you know, been watching the bullies winning. I'm tired of it.
God, Richard, that speaks volumes.
You know, I'm 67 years old. I have spent virtually my entire life in a country that's either at war or preparing for war. And the guns have won over the butter. And we just take this for granted. This is the way things ought to be. This is the way things are. You know, and I say, no. This is a sickness that we're living inside of. We got a hell of a disease in this country. When I was a child, I was in the Cub Scouts. You know, and I did all the Cub Scout stuff, right?
Right.
The Cub Scouts do. Well, then I got old, you know, older. And I'm talking about Brooklyn, New York here. I thought, okay, I'll check out the Boy Scouts. So I went over to a nearby school. I walked in. It must have been about 7 p.m. And what the Boy Scouts were doing was they were drilling with rifles. And I thought, this is not me. What craziness is this? We don't, you know. Have we ever looked at this as a whole societal insanity? We are living in a crazy country, and we're trying to break through. We're trying to bring our sanity to it, but I think we need to be clever. We need to be really smart. We need to understand our enemy and our enemies.
Oh, we certainly do, Richard. But by the same token, sometimes I fear that some of what we've done has been too much an attempt to be clever and smart. When all in the, you know, you mentioned bullies. The way you oppose a bully is by standing up directly to the bully.
Yeah.
Not by trying to flank him.
Yeah.
And it's you know, it's these first little hesitant steps towards standing up to the bully that happened with the passage of the health care bill that really mark a clear way forward. I mean, if you look at the money that Alan Grayson is raising, you know, he's got